From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And on the far outside, Rombauer, and they're all coming down to the line. Dynamite, here comes Rombauer to run them down.
Don't know what caliber he is yet, you know. Obviously, running his Breeders' Cup race is very respectable. I don't think distance is going to be an issue with him. He's not a very big horse. He's got some good mechanics. He's got deep foot. So we'll see. We'll run first time off the layoff, going a mile and eighth on a synthetic surface, see what happens.
It's still Midnight Bourbon, past the 16th. Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon, Vince LeComp.
He's a big, beautiful horse that had run some solid races as a two-year-old, but I definitely think that there's more of him, a lot more mature horse as a three-year-old, and he put it together in the LeComp and ran a very good race. You know, he's just a big, beautiful horse with a huge pedigree. It's always been a gorgeous mover. And I think, obviously, we're very excited about the three-year-old program at Fairgrounds here in Louisiana. And mile and 16th LeComp, mile and an eighth Risen Star, and a mile and 3/16th Louisiana Derby sure should suit him.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, you hear Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen and California-based Mike McCarthy talking about their talented three-year-olds looking to take another step toward the Twin Spires, and it makes you realize the first Saturday in May is edging ever closer. Now only 77 days, 9 hours, 43 minutes, and wait for it, 15 seconds until the Run for the Roses. Yeah, can you tell I have a little Derby fever already? Now, for many of you who are sitting here in central Kentucky, like I am, and through much of this region, that's probably somewhat hard to believe, considering that you look out your window and the trees and the railings are still covered with ice from the storm that rolled through here a couple of days ago. But it's coming. It's coming. Trust me. Heck, the first day of spring is only 35 days away. Let that warm you up a little bit. March 20th, the first day of spring. Yeah, the finish line, it doesn't seem like it right now, especially with the forecast this week here in the Bluegrass. Maybe a foot of snow, who knows. But the finish line is definitely in sight, and excited for that first Saturday in May, edging ever closer. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is a loaded show this morning. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, ready to roll for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern on the show that launched a network that is now even better as we stretched out in distance, added the extra hour a few weeks ago, and so many of you have weighed in on how much you're enjoying it, and I really do appreciate that. I'm going to cover an awful lot of ground on today's show, and of course, I'll invite you to be part of the show in our final segment at 10:40 Eastern when I open the phone lines and take your calls. But before we get to that point, you'll hear from Dermot Carty of Edina Springs. He's going to kick off the show coming up in just a few minutes at 8:12 Eastern. Dermot will be previewing the Edina Stallion roster for 2021, and it's a good one. Laurel Racing Secretary Jillian Tulloch will be with me at 8:35 Eastern to talk about their Saturday card, which features 6 stakes races, including the Grade 3 Barbara Fritchie and the Grade 3 General George. At 9 o'clock Eastern, I'll look back on the life and career of longtime NYRA announcer Marshall Cassidy, who passed away last Sunday at the age of 75. Marshall was the NYRA announcer from 1979 to 1990, and I'll be joined by current NYRA announcer John Embriel and NBC announcer Larry Colmus to share some of their fondest memories of Marshall, and that comes up again at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. With tomorrow's big Valentine's Day, I kind of thought it would be fun to include a Valentine's-related segment on today's show. So at 9:20, you're going to hear a special Valentine's Day edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, which is now presented every week by Keeneland and Lane's End. And you can hear that again, 9:20. That will be followed by my interview with one trainer in particular who is forever linked to the 14th of February. That is dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie, who will celebrate his 60th birthday tomorrow on Valentine's Day. That's all in that 9:20 segment. At 9:40, trainer Todd Fincher will make his HRN debut as he joins me to talk about his undefeated Risen Star contender, Senor Buscador. Great story there. Which, by the way, that name translates to Mr. Seeker. And he's going to be seeking to prove he belongs among the top Kentucky Derby contenders later today in that Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. And this week's edition of our popular new segment, In the Room with Sean Clancy, comes your way at the top of hour number three. That's 10 Eastern. Sean sits down for his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with the red-hot Junior Alvarado. This is one you will not want to miss. Junior, one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And this should be a really fun interview coming up with Sean at 10 Eastern. Owen Hardy, the trainer of Javonica, who will go in the El Camino Real Derby later this afternoon at Golden Gate, is going to be with me toward the end of the program at 10:25. And as always, in the final segment at 10:40, I will open up the phone lines and take your calls. It's a brand new listener call-in segment that I started a few weeks ago when the show expanded to 3 hours. Every week, you have the chance to call into the show and to talk about racing. Anything that's on your mind, we'll do it. You want to talk about the prep races coming up today? You want to talk about maybe the favorite gift you like to receive on Valentine's Day? Yeah, we'll stick with that theme throughout the show today. How about that? Here's the poll question for this morning. Go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and let me know your thoughts. What is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? And I'm going to give you four choices. And I can tell you if my wife, the Baroness, is taking time to vote on that poll question today, I'm pretty sure I know which one she's going to pick. I have one rule. There is one thing I have to do every Valentine's Day as her husband, and even before that, as her boyfriend. One thing I have to do every Valentine's Day, it doesn't matter if I get her a card, it doesn't matter if I get her flowers, it doesn't matter if I take her to dinner, the one thing I have to do is stop and pick up a box of chocolate-covered strawberries. Anything else, I'm fine. I forget the strawberries, I'm screwed. So that's our poll question today. What is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? Four choices. Flowers, chocolates, which of course could be chocolate-covered strawberries, dinner, you like to be taken to dinner, or other. And if you have another thing that you like to do, that you like to receive on Valentine's Day, check the other box, specify, let me know. What is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? Flowers, chocolates, dinner, or other. You can do that at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right, a loaded show. I told you, it is jam-packed here this morning. Every segment full, special segments, new segments, your first bet of the day. All of that still ahead. But when I come back, Dermot Carty joins me from Medina Springs to preview the 2021 Stallion roster. This is the Equine Forum on HRN.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile, and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
And as they turn for home, Point of Entry has Optimizer to catch. And they hit the top of the stretch. Optimizer, Point of Entry. Real Solution is a late threat here for Point of Entry. They're entering the final furlong. Point of Entry fights his way to a short lead. Real Solution continues to attack on the outside. Optimizer at the rail. A wild finish coming here. And Point of Entry. Oh, the classy Point of Entry would not be denied. Optimizer held on for second there. Real Solution was third. Finnegan's Wake was fourth.
Tom Durkin with a call of the 2013 Manhattan Point of Entry would not be denied. I love that call. Point of Entry not denied in many races in his career. He was pretty darn good. Several grade ones to his credit. I believe maybe 5 grade one victories. Hoping to talk with Dermot Carty about that coming up in just a few minutes. He is one of several stallions standing at Edina Springs. He is now in Canada. That's new for 2021. He joins American Guru, who is brand new at Edina for 2021, up in Canada. He's a son of Unbridled Song. Silent Name is there. Shaman Ghost, the Hall of Famer, is also there. And then here in Kentucky, Ghost Sapper and Mucho Macho Man, who are both currently standing at Hillendale, but part of the Edina Stallion roster. They are owned by Edina, standing at Hillendale. That's a pretty... When you look at... If you're going to pick 6 stallions, and I know that there are farms here in Central Kentucky, so many of them support this program, they have a bigger stallion roster than what Edina has right now. But you look at those 6, that's a solid 6. I know American Guru is new, but Shaman Ghost, Hall of Fame member, Point of Entry, who you just heard. Ghost Sapper, he's proven. Mucho Macho Man has gotten off to a nice start. So, yeah. I mean, that is real. You can go to AdinaStallions.com and take a look at the stallion roster and read more about each of the stallions. Again, hoping to be joined by Dermot Carty. We are efforting him at this point. If for some reason Dermot is busy, doesn't get a chance to make it this morning, you're going to hear from trainer Steve Asmussen. You heard a short clip of him talking about Midnight Bourbon in the open to the show. But we'll bring you the full interview that Steve did yesterday with the Big A Anthony Stabile on our Race Day program, which you can catch, by the way, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 Eastern. It's all presented by our friends at Twin Spires. Either way, you'll hear from Dermot talking about the Edina Stallions, or I'll bring you that interview with Steve Asmussen, and you'll hear Steve talking about Midnight Bourbon and his other contenders this weekend. Steve is going to have a very busy weekend, as are so many trainers in the sport, as we start to edge closer to the first Saturday in May, which, by the way, I don't know if you've realized this or not. If you look that far ahead in your calendar, and if you listen to the show, you know every week I update you on how many days and hours and minutes and seconds we are away from the Run for the Roses. It is the earliest that the Kentucky Derby could possibly be held, May 1st. First Saturday in May. Doesn't get any earlier than that. Which means the Kentucky Oaks will be on the final Friday in April this year. Everything's a bit earlier. So keep that in mind. And, you know, I talk about the weather. I talk about it not being very nice here in Central Kentucky and throughout this particular region. And it's only going to get uglier throughout the week with the forecast. But Churchill Downs sent a press release out yesterday that really helped to warm me up a little bit. And it was so good to see, especially with everything that our country and our world has been through over the past year plus. Derby week, spring meet tickets on sale. How about that email that I received yesterday? Derby week, spring meet tickets on sale now. And you can go to the Kentucky Derby website, kentuckyderby.com/tickets, if you want to learn more about that. But, yeah, very nice to see, especially considering the fact that there were so many of the tracks, even though racing kept going last year, forced to run without fans. So that is welcome news, and it does help to warm you up on a cold Saturday morning here in the Bluegrass. All right, well, apparently Dermot is busy this morning. Again, you can go to adinastallions.com to learn more about all the stallions standing in Canada and Go Sapper and Mucho Macho Man here in Kentucky, standing at Hillendale. Go to adinastallions.com and learn more there. We'll go ahead. I'm going to bring you that interview with Steve Asmus. And again, he took time to sit down with Anthony Stabile yesterday on our race day program. And here's what he had to say about all of his top runners this weekend.
Nice enough to join us now to wrap the program. His Hall of Fame trainer, Steve Asmussen, has a busy day tomorrow down at the fairground. Steve, thanks for some time this afternoon on race day.
Oh, glad to be on. Thank you.
That was some effort from this horse last time, Midnight Bourbon.
It really was. You know, he's a big, beautiful horse that had run some solid races as a two-year-old, but I definitely think that there's more of him, a lot more mature horse as a three-year-old, and he put it together in the Le Comp and ran a very good race.
We've seen you do this with quite a few of your two-year-olds in, as they turn, and you know, and then into the three-year-old. Yeah, this horse has only run at a mile and beyond, those one-and-a-half turn races down at Ellis Park and then the one turn at Churchill and Belmont. Was there something about him that always made you believe he would want the added distance that you never sprinted him?
Yeah, size and pedigree. You know, he's just a big, beautiful horse with a huge pedigree that has always been a gorgeous mover. And I think, obviously, we've, you know, very excited about the three-year-old program at Louisiana Downs. I mean, at the fairgrounds here in Louisiana. And mile and 16th Le Comp, mile and an eighth Risen Star, and the mile and 3/16th Louisiana Derby sure should suit him.
Yeah, his speed figure jumped up in a big way, regardless of what you use, from the Champagne to the Le Comp. He had that little three-month break, and it really seems to have done him well.
Yes, I think that time is definitely going to help him from here going forward, as it has to this point.
He's in a little bit of a different spot tomorrow afternoon. He gets a little more ground. He's drawn towards the middle of the pack as opposed to flat up against the rail, and there looks to be a little bit more speed in this race than was signed on last time. Joe Talamo gave him a perfect ride last time, a guy you don't use that often. Do you give Joe specific instructions as to how to ride this horse tomorrow? Do you let him just play the break?
I think that has everything to do with him riding him back. You know, he felt the good version of Midnight Bourbon, his first two-turn race. I think that rhythm and how, you know, and the dialogue I've had with Joe since the race, you know, I'm very comfortable with how he'll handle him. As you had mentioned, there appears to be more speed signed on for this race. I think our biggest variable is going to be the off track. It's very wet here right now. Chances of it drying out, or, you know, we're probably going to get more rain, actually. How a horse as big as him is going to handle an off track, I think, is going to be our biggest question mark for tomorrow.
I think people would look at his pedigree and say, well, this horse is bred to love a wet track. But talk a little bit about that. His size, it almost negates the pedigree, if you will.
Well, as you mentioned, the pedigree has handled a lot of surfaces. I think he'll handle a lot of surfaces, but we're not wet. We're underwater at this point. It could be very different for everybody.
It's been a tough run of weather down in that part of the country, that southwest into just, you know, down into the bayou. And it's affected other plans. Before we talk about Clairiere, obviously it's weird to say this, but the other two-year-old in the barn's a horse by the name of Jackie's Warrior, who is a two-time Grade 1 winner, a bang-up effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. His race, again, because of the weather, postponed from Monday to next Saturday. He is expected to run in the southwest at Oaklawn Park. How's he doing?
very, a brilliant two-year-old, as you mentioned. Grade one wins in the hopeful and the champagne in very emphatic fashion. He's trained very impressively, a very fast horse, yet to have success at two turns, but we gave him a little break after the Breeders' Cup. The horse has got a great mind about him, and he still has a ton of ability. So, obviously, we're excited about the prospects of running him in the Southwest, even if it is 5 days later than planned.
I think a lot of people are surprised to see him continue on the trail. I don't think a lot of those people realize just how well he ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It seems you haven't really wavered on him.
He's got a ton of talent. I'm not looking to run a slow one, that's for sure. I'd rather run a fast one like him. With that being said, what you see at Keeneland, it's hard to duplicate everywhere else, no matter how good or how bad. It wasn't his best race. It wasn't a good race, but you're talking about a horse that did beat Midnight Bourbon 14 lengths over a mile.
Yeah, back in the Champagne in October over at beautiful Belmont Park. All right. Earlier on the card, in fact, the race right before the Risen Star, a race that's near and dear to your heart, the Rachel Alexandra. Clarière, she'll run in the Stone Street, in the Golden Burgundy. I'm sure this is a race you want to win this race every year, but I'm sure you'd love to win one.
Yeah, right.
In with these colors.
Stone Street connections with all Rachel did for us. And, Clarière is a very good representation for the silks of Stone Street. And I feel that she's very similar to Midnight Bourbon in the fact that time and distance is only going to help her.
In her second start last time, she ran an absolute brilliant second in the Goldenrod. Another one, you've given a little time. You mentioned how she's a lot like Midnight Bourbon. I'm assuming this time off has helped her mature a little bit as well.
Like I said, the time and distance will always be on her side. Beautiful filly with just impeccable pedigree, being a Curlin out of Cavorting. Just very exciting. Conditions of the day, I think she'll handle them from a running over the top of it situation, but that is going to be a lot of mud in her face that she has not experienced to this point.
Yeah, and you should keep talking about the weather. I don't think you can stress it enough, Al, especially with the younger horses, right? For the ones that haven't seen it, it's just another,
right.
Another fact.
As you mentioned, lightly raced, haven't experienced this, and then to experience it against quality competition is another variable for us.
All right, well, Steve, we'll let you get running. Thank you again, as always, for being so gracious with your time. Best of luck tomorrow. Best of luck next Saturday. I'm sure we'll talk to you down the Derby Trail. Midnight Bourbon looks to make it two in a row at the Fairgrounds.
Thank you very
much. Steve.
All right, my thanks to Steve Asmussen for taking time to do that interview with the Big A yesterday. Again, that interview on our Race Day program, which you can catch every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3 to 6 Eastern here on the network, Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming at horseracingradio.net. Look, Steve is loaded. And, you think about all the big wins that Steve has had in his career, and he has won more races than any trainer in the history of our sport, barring Dale Baird. But the one race that he has been unable to capture, and he's been close, is the Kentucky Derby. And, I asked him that question, maybe it was last year, when he was on this program, and I asked him why that race has been so difficult to add to his resume. And you wouldn't ask just anybody that, right? But somebody like Steve Asmussen, who has won so many, pretty much every big race that we have in the sport. And, he kind of laughed. And I remember him saying, well, it's the Kentucky Derby. Yeah, enough said. It's the Kentucky Derby. You're talking about, think about just getting a horse to the races and how difficult it can be just to get a horse to the races in the starting gate for his maiden race. Then to win a race becomes infinitely more difficult. To win an allowance race after that becomes extremely difficult. The level of difficulty goes up even more when you're trying to win a stakes race, then a graded stake, and then narrow it down to just 20 horses allowed in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May and be the one horse to win the most famous, most prestigious race in the history of thoroughbred racing. That's why it's so difficult. Think about that. It's an accomplishment just to get a horse to the starting gate for their first race, to get them all the way to the Kentucky Derby, and to get them there and then see them win it's like winning the lottery. It's almost impossible. We know it's not impossible because people do it every year, but to put it in perspective, that shows you how difficult it is. And here's Steve Asmussen trying desperately to get there and get to the winner's circle and hoist that trophy after the Kentucky Derby. All right, it is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's first bet, and I'll visit with Jillian Tulloch, who is the racing secretary at Laurel, to preview their big day. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
For want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, a race was lost. This is the story of the tragic demise of a thoroughbred who was thought by some to have been the greatest horse ever to don a set of racing plates. He raced in the colors of Darby Dan Farm and was trained by Lloyd Gentry. He was the son of Rebo out of Flower Bowl by Alibi, and by late April of his three-year-old campaign had become the solid choice for the Kentucky Derby. He was a big, rock-solid colt who had muscles that literally rippled with raw power. In terms of confirmation, he was some kind of a thoroughbred specimen. He won his first seven races by an average margin of 5.5 lengths and never had a rival finish closer than 4 lengths to him. Incredible! He'd never gone over 7/8 of a mile in any of his wins until the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland on April 28, 1966. In that race, he was beaten a bare nostril by the Very Good Abe's Hope, but, as it turned out, that was his greatest performance of an abbreviated career, which in fact ended with that race. He had run the final 5 furlongs of that race on a sloppy racetrack on what amounted to 3 legs and a mountain of courage. That story well worth recounting. He had been reshod April 21st, 1 week before the Bluegrass, after he had been plated by one farrier. Another put a new bar shoe on his left hind foot, which he had bruised in Florida. It appeared he might be carrying that foot a bit high on Sunday, April 24th, when he worked a mile in 140, and his stride was a measured one. Veteran horsemen well know that when a horse goes bad behind, it usually means trouble up front somewhere down the line. On April 27th, the morning before the Bluegrass, he worked 3/8 and 33-4 on a sloppy track. To the careful observer, it was apparent he was off a bit on his left front as he trotted back to the barn to be cooled out. In the Bluegrass the next afternoon, he broke like a cannon shot and was 6 in front going around the clubhouse turn. At just about the 5/8 pole, he took a noticeably bad step, almost stopping in midair, as a matter of fact, and from that point on, he continued on nothing more than sheer, pure, raw courage. You see, at that point of the misstep, he had fractured the wing of the coffin bone in his left forefoot, as it was discovered later. Braulio Baeza, the cool Panamanian who rode him in 6 of his 7 wins, said, quote, "He went around the turn fairly good, but as soon as he got into the straightaway on the backside, he tried to run out, which, in fact, hurt or sore horses are prone to do. Quote, I tapped him on the shoulder a couple of times, trying to keep him straight, but he tried to get out all the way down the backside, and he was still trying to get out after the race, unquote. In that race, he galloped out 1.25 in 2:03.2. On Sunday, May 1st, 6 days before the Kentucky Derby, the fracture showed up in X-rays. And not only was he subsequently withdrawn from the run for the Roses, but his racing career was at an end. That marvelous thoroughbred, who later went on to outstanding seasons of production in the breeding shed, and who was, in some observers' eyes, the very best to ever grace American racetracks, was Graustark. His story is indeed a tragic yet memorable moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Catholic boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win grade ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A six-time graded stakes winner from ages 2 to 4, he was the fastest three-year-old of his crop over 10 furlongs. In foal to Catholic Boy, the Dam of Swiss Skydiver sold for $950,000. Dual surface grade one winner Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing fans, you can now watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Make plans to join us online for a big three-day weekend, as we'll have special President's Day racing this Monday. On Saturday, top fillies and mares will go 7 furlongs in the Grade 2 Santa Monica. On Sunday, three-year-old fillies will go 6 furlongs on turf in the Grade 3 Sweet Life. And on Monday, we'll honor the dam of 1989 Horse of the Year, Sunday Silence, with the $75,000 wishing well at 6.5 furlongs on turf. Looking ahead to one of the biggest days of the year, Saturday, March 6th, we'll have 5 stakes, including the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap and the Grade 2 San Felipe, one of America's most important Derby preps. With first post time at 12:30, join us early all weekend at 11:20 a.m. as track announcer Frank Miramonte and Tom Quigley handicap each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
Less than 3/8 of a mile to go. The half was in 45-2. Extra Heat still showing the way. Prize Stamp Gold Mover. Kimberlotta is running a big race in fourth, and Kimberlotta's got some run. Left on the inside, just needs to get through down there, running 4th and 3 off the lead, but Extra Heat spurts away 3/16 out in the Fritchie. Kimberlotta running stoutly on the inside, trying to capture second from Prize Stamp, followed by Gold Mover. 1/8 of a mile to go. Extra Heat put to pressure, driving 3.5 lengths with a 16th to come now from Kimberlotta. Lotta and Prize Stamp and Gold Mover. They can't beat the Heat. Extra Heat. She wins it by 2.5 in 1/22 and 3.
Yeah, Hall of Famer Extra Heat. That was Dave Rodman with the call of the 2002 running of the Barbara Fritchie. Can you believe that? It's been 19 years since Extra Heat won the Barbara Fritchie. For the first time, she came back and did it again the following year. And she is one of three horses to win the Barbara Fritchie Stakes twice. She's one of only two horses to do it in consecutive years. Twixt did it in 1974 and 75. And you had Ski Pat, who did it in 79 and again in 81, but not in consecutive years. So Twixt and Extra Heat, the two. And Extra Heat was so brilliant. That is a race, by the way. The Barbara Fritchie, one of two grade threes on the program today at Laurel. That is a race that is underrated. Let's use that word. I think that's the right way to put it. Underrated, because you've had some really, I mean, going back to Extra Heat and Twixt and JJ's Dream in 1998. Remember JJ's Dream? She was one heck of a sprinter too. Miss Golden Circle, John Kimmel, Richard Migliori was aboard, or Migliori, as it is properly pronounced in Italian. Yeah, there have been some really, really top female. How about that one in 2007? Remember Oprah Winnie? Great play on words there. Yeah, there have been some good ones who have come through that race and gone on to some really big things. And that is, again, just one of two grade threes. The other one, the General George Stakes, is rock solid too. And I'm going to talk with Jillian Tulloch, the racing secretary at Laurel, coming up about all those races momentarily. But it is time for this week's edition of Today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, Today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes from race 8 at Santa Anita, the grade 2 Santa Monica, which has a post time of 7:20 Eastern, 4:20 locally on the West Coast. It is number 3, Fair Maiden, 4-1 morning line odds. She has a 27% first bet win projection. She rates 16 points higher than the next closest win contender and is top ranked in 5 of the top 10 first bet factors in this race. Fair Maiden won the La Brea Stakes in her only attempt over the Santa Anita main track and is 2-for-3 on dirt since changing surfaces. 2020 leading owner Godolphin is certainly primed for a big Saturday with Maxfield and Proxy both racing at the fairgrounds. Today's first bet is number 3, Fair Maiden, in race 8 at Santa Anita. And I'll be back right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races. Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
All right, well, you're definitely going to want to take a look at today's first bet and Fair Maiden out there in California. There's going to be plenty of times for you to make a bet. There are plenty of ways you can make a bet today at Laurel with that great card that they put together. 9 races, 6 of the 9 races are stakes races, including the 2 grade 3s that I just mentioned, the Barbara Fritchie and the General George. And the person who is largely responsible for recruiting the horses and putting these fields together is Jillian Tulloch, the Laurel Racing Secretary, and she is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jillian, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and congrats on a really rock-solid card, start to finish.
Yeah, I was pretty excited when it all came together. It looks nice.
Yeah, it does look nice. When you first, Jillian, as the Racing Secretary, start looking at a big day like this, obviously you have to put the condition book together, and you have to put all the races in the condition book so the trainers know where they can enter and when they can enter. But when you start talking to trainers about compete day like this in these stakes races, what's your sales pitch? How do you go about it?
You know, with our big race days, we're kind of lucky in the fact that a lot of people have them on their calendar and are pointing toward them with certain horses. And actually, to be perfectly honest, we were really lucky with the local participation this year, with a lot of really good local horses right here at Laurel and Pimlico that are participating, which is a huge help when you have your own horsemen supporting the program.
Has the pandemic affected you in any way when you're putting together cards like this?
The only issue we had with this weekend is, you know, we have implemented new safety and welfare protocols for our graded stakes, which require the horses in the graded stakes to be on our grounds by Wednesday before the race. And with it, obviously with the COVID-19, we've had to deal with getting their help put up, and they can't stay on the backside and intermingle with our help. So it was a little tricky doing that this year, but it was quite successful, and everybody was very cooperative and came to run.
You know, I was talking earlier as we were coming out of the last commercial break. I was talking about the Barbara Fritchie, and I said that race to me, the one word I would use to describe it is underrated when you look at graded stakes in our sport, because there have been some tremendous female sprinters that have come through that race over the years, haven't there?
Yes. No, it's I can't wait for that race today. I'm so excited to see what happens, especially with our two locals, with Brittany Russell and Lacey Godette, the two young ladies that have the top two horses in the race.
Yeah, you know, later in the program, we're going to hear from Mark Cassie. He's going to join me. Mark is tied to Valentine's Day, which of course is tomorrow, because his birthday is tomorrow, so he's forever tied to February 14th. But you have Brittany Russell, who you just mentioned, who is the wife of jockey Sheldon Russell. And Sheldon riding for Brittany in those races today. I'm just wondering how that Valentine's Day plays out if Sheldon happens to maybe get a horse in trouble later today.
I don't know. I'm not sure what happens in that household, but they've been on a pretty good run, so I don't think there's too much arguing going on.
Yeah, he might want to give her the flowers or the chocolates maybe this morning before today, she gives him a leg up.
Before the race.
Just to be safe. Well, let's talk about those two great...
They're a great couple. It's fun to see them doing so well.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Let's talk about those two greatest stakes, and let's start with the Grade 3 Barbara Fritchie. Then we can discuss some of the storylines in the earlier stakes races. But, again, you said you're pumped up for the Barbara Fritchie. You talked about the local horses. Tell me about this field and how it all came together, Jillian.
Well, first of all, I have to give major props to my stakes coordinator because she's the one that's out there on the front line really talking to these guys every day leading up to the nominations. Once the nominations come out, she's in contact with them to see where they're pointing towards. So Trish Bowman is my stakes coordinator, and she did a fabulous job on the weekend. So I give her props for most of the contacting. In terms of the race itself, I'm interested to see who's faster. Don't Let Sweet Fool You or Hello Beautiful.
Yeah, they both have a lot of early gas, and you would have to think that whoever gets to the front, assuming that they don't push each other too fast, would have a big advantage in that race. That's a pretty good showdown in there. And then you also have the horse breaking from the rail, the four-year-old daughter of Munnings, that is Sharp Star, who has shown plenty of ability from just off the pace.
Yep, to sit right there and pounce if she can. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's in the Barbara Fritchie. And by the way, that is race 7 on the 9-race program. 3:23 Eastern is the post time for the Barbara Fritchie. It is followed as the 8th race by the Grade 3 General George at 3:53. And now the boys get a chance to strut their stuff. And this is another rock-solid field top to bottom.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's a pretty evenly matched race for the most part.
Yeah, I guess the favorite is that Funny Guy at 9-5.
Yeah, that's Terranova. Yep.
Yeah. Sheldon Russell. Here you go. Our aforementioned Sheldon Russell not riding for his wife in that race, but this is a 5-year-old son of Big Brown, and Funny Guy is a horse that has shown plenty of ability, and that's why he's the morning line favorite in there. But he certainly looks like he could be a handful, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that General George, Jillian Tulloch, by the way, joining me, the racing secretary at Laurel. Jillian, how about the earlier stakes races? Who are some of the horses and the storylines we should keep an eye on in the earlier stakes?
Well, again, you have Brittany and the 3-year-old fillies. And Lacey, honestly, they both have horses in the straight 3-year-old race that we have right before the Fritchie, the Wide Country. Mm-hmm. So it's always fun to see them do well. But the star of that race is definitely Street Loot, Jerry Robb's filly, who has only been beaten once in 7 starts. She's been pretty phenomenal around here. So she will definitely go to the gate as the favorite. Then we have the Nellie Morris, another good stake. The older mare's going long, which, you know, a lot of times it's hard to get a big field of mares to go long this time of year. And we got 10 in the starting gate, so I'm really excited about that, too.
Yeah, that's a really solid race. And, again, another one that I guess if you were going to say underrated, there have been some really good horses to come through the Nellie Morse, too. You know, one of my favorites on the program today and every year is the Miraclewood, because we're always talking about the Derby points races and the horses that are competing trying to get to the Derby. These are straight 3-year-olds, and these horses all have Derby dreams in their head now. And if not, they certainly have Preakness dreams being based there in Maryland for a lot of these horses.
Absolutely. You know, the Miraclewood is kind of our first step of stretching 3-year-olds out here in Maryland. And we do the Miraclewood in February. And then we do the private terms in March. And that leads up to our Federico Tessio in April, which is kind of our sequence to get for our local Triple Crown people or possible Derby horse. But like you said, definitely people looking at the Preakness being able to run in the big dance at home.
Yeah, and a horse that's going to take a lot of play in there is a horse with a great name. May the horse be with you. And as somebody who grew up
in, and another Brittany Russell horse.
Another Brittany Russell horse with her husband Sheldon getting a leg up. You know, it's funny, Jillian, because I grew up watching the replay shows in Western Massachusetts, and I would watch the New York replay shows every night growing up, and Harvey Pack would host the shows. And at the end of each of those programs, his shtick was at the end of each replay show, he would take his program, he would throw it at the camera, and he would say, "May the horse be with you." And so I love the name
it's
of
so
this horse.
Funny.
And
yeah.
It would be so cool to see this horse win.
I know, and I have to say, I didn't realize that you grew up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, because I grew up in Saratoga, and my husband grew up in Western Massachusetts.
No kidding.
When he went to school in elementary school, when the windows were open in the nice weather, he could hear the calls from the Great Barrington Fair races.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, Mark Cassie, who's going to be with me later, that's where he won his very first race as a trainer, was the Great Barrington Fair.
That's where my husband started training, up at all the fairs. I think his first winner, I think it was Marshfield Fair.
Yeah. Well, the fair circuit in Massachusetts used to be booming.
Yep, phenomenal.
Yeah, I had a chance at one point to call races at the Northampton Fair. I called for when my former partner Pete Coolis was calling races there. He brought me up one day, and I got to call a few races, which was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's a whole different kettle of fish when you talk about what used to take place and what those fair races were all about. Jillian Tulloch, the Laurel Racing Secretary, is my special guest here on the Equine Forum on HRRN. Jillian, was it just growing up in Saratoga? Is that where the love of horse racing began for you?
Well, I have. I'd be remiss if I did not mention the fact that my great uncle was George Cassidy, who was the starter in New York for over 50 years, and was also the starter of the infamous Seabiscuit race. Mm-hmm. And my cousin, my second cousin, my mother's cousin, was Marshall Cassidy, who we just lost last weekend.
Oh, wow. Wow, we're going to actually remember Marshall Cassidy coming up in a little bit at 9 Eastern. John Embriel, the current NYRA announcer, is going to join me, and Larry Comas from NBC will be with me, too, to look back on his life and his career and share some stories about Marshall. I had one opportunity to interview. Yeah, I had one chance to interview Marshall, and the only time I ever really spoke with him was in 2016. It was Travers Morning. Jude Feld was doing the show with me, and we spent, 15 minutes or so talking with Marshall on the show. But I can remember Jillian calling him and asking him to come on the program. And when he answered the phone with that distinctive voice and that distinctive
so
delivery,
distinct.
Yeah, I'm thinking this wasn't just a thing he did on the microphone calling races. This was who Marshall Cassidy was, and it was fantastic. I'll never forget that phone call.
Yeah, his voice was... you know, you can liken it to name that tune. He could say one word and you'd know exactly who was speaking.
Yeah. So the horse racing's always been in your pedigree.
Yeah, well, horse racing, it has, to be perfectly honest, it wasn't what I was looking to do when I grew up. I just, you know, I had the luxury of having that connection with horse racing. But honestly, when I was growing up in Saratoga, I was on the horse show circuit. I was showing horses. So I showed horses all through up until I went to college, did all the national horse show back when it was at Madison Square Garden. And that was kind of my passion. And then I went to, I attended Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York, and got a sports management degree. And because of the connections in New York, I had to do an internship, and I was able to get into the racing office in Saratoga one summer to start, you know, could do my internship for my degree, and it just kind of snowballed from there, and I never left the track.
Yeah. Did you ever see yourself as a racing secretary someplace?
I've always hoped to. I mean, I couldn't have had a better role model in front of me in George Ann Hale, who I was her second in command for 20 plus years.
Yeah, she was, and still is just an amazing person and somebody who meant so much and did so much for racing in the state of Maryland.
Yep, she's the queen of Maryland racing. Will always
be. What are some of the things that she did really well that you're hoping to emulate now as you take the reins and you're the racing secretary there at Laurel?
I think the most important thing is to be able to communicate with people and really understand where, you know, when you're the racing secretary, you're kind of getting pulled in several different directions, and it's the ability to manage that and be fair to everybody at the same time, making them understand where, you know, where you're at and your responsibilities, and just trying to work well with people, respect them, work well with them. That's the biggest key.
Yeah, I think the only fault that Georgianne may have is the fact that she's a Baltimore Ravens fan. Other than that, lovely person.
Oh, easy there, Steeler boy. I'm a Ravens fan, too.
Well, this interview came to an abrupt end. Jillian, it's been nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining me here on the program.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, seriously, really do appreciate the time. I do have to get to another commercial break, but it's been wonderful to talk with you for a few minutes. Great job with the card at Laurel today. Again, 9 races, 6 of those are stakes races, and Jillian Tulloch and her team have done a great job putting that card together. Jillian, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Mike. Have a great show.
All right, Jillian Tulloch, maybe better known as Princess there in Maryland, and she really has taken the reins from one of the best, and is moving things forward there in Maryland and at Laurel Park. So that interview, by the way, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Where would you love? Embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'll get to another break, come back and get you set for the second half of the program, the second hour of the program, hour 2 of 3. That comes up next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of sire sires, Taprit, to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
Sunday Silence draws alongside Le Voyageur. Those two have a length and a half on Easy Goer. Easy Goer now makes a move. They round the far turn. Sunday Silence takes the lead by a neck. Le Voyageur on the rail on the outside. Easy Goer. Easy Goer on the outside takes over now by a half. And Sunday Silence is second. Le Voyageur is back into third. They're in the stretch. It's Easy Goer on the outside getting cleared now by two. Sunday Silence remains in second. Le Voyageur on the rail is third. Easy Goer gets clear by four. Sunday Silence remains in second. Le Voyageur, the horse from France, is third. It's New York's Easy Goer in front.
Yeah, probably the signature call, if you will, of the late Marshall Cassidy. The 1989 Belmont Stakes, New York's Easy Goer. He'll be remembered for that call and so many more over the years. Going to visit with NYRA announcer John Embriel coming up 9 o'clock Eastern. That's just a few minutes away. Larry Colmus from NBC also going to be with me to look back on the life and career and share some stories about Marshall Cassidy, who, if you are just joining the show, if you didn't hear the news, Marshall passing away last Sunday at the age of 75, and really looking forward to that segment coming up in just a few minutes. By the way, I'm going to posthumously make Marshall this week's Industry Star of the Week for everything that he did for the sport as the NYRA announcer for so many years. And that segment coming up, that reflection and remembrance of Marshall Cassidy, is going to be brought to you by Stuart Morris, who, as I tell you every week, he offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with so many stakes horses over the past several years that include the likes of Henley's Joy and Our Brain Trust and Malagasy and South Bend, Stuart Morris, he truly is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales coming up around the country. So make sure you keep an eye on that. And again, that segment coming up in just a few minutes. Do want to remind you as well that if you are an outdoorsman, if you like to hunt, if you like to fish, if you like archery, whatever it is, I started telling you a few weeks ago about the brand new Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, which is in Nicholasville here in Kentucky, central Kentucky. It's only 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And I grew up hunting and fishing and doing all of those things and had a chance to stop by the store to visit with Tevis McCauley, who is a former horse trainer. He is now the owner of Whitetail Heaven Outfitters and their Elite Outdoor Superstore. And spent an hour with Tevis on our Trainer Talk program, looking back on his training career, and got a chance to preview the new store. It's awesome. Hunting clothes, boots, tree stands, blinds, any kind of equipment you need, I highly recommend it. Go see them. And they even have an indoor archery range, a couple of those actually, which is pretty cool. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And you tell them that the Baron sent you in there and told you to say hello and pick out some great products there. Again, hour two kicks off with John Embriel, Larry Colmus. Mark Cassie is going to be with me at 9:25 Eastern. He will follow a special Valentine's edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Keeneland and Lane Zen. That comes up at 9:20. At 9:40, right in that ballpark, Todd Fincher will be with me. He gets set to send out Senor Buscador in today's Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. Two for two, but he has to prove that he belongs at this level. I'll talk to Todd about Senor Buscador later in the second half of the show. Third hour kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy, that popular new segment that we launched a few weeks ago. Sean sits down for a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Junior Alvarado. That's at 10 Eastern. 10:25, Owen Hardy will be with me to talk about the El Camino Real Derby. And then at 10:40, the final segment of the show, as I've done the past several weeks, I will open up the phone lines and take your phone calls here on HRRN. You can be part of the show, 10:40 Eastern. Talk about anything in the world of thoroughbred racing that's on your mind. We can do that in that final segment. So there is an awful lot to get to here this morning. When I come back, we will remember the late, great Marshall Cassidy. That's next. Hour two, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Pool 3 of the Kentucky Derby Future Wager is underway. Two-year-old champ Essential Quality and Life is Good lead the individual betting interests, while all other three-year-old option figures to be favored when wagering closes Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Essential Quality seasonal debut will have to wait until next Saturday, with racing at Oaklawn Park canceled this holiday weekend. He's expected to go off favored in the Grade 3 Southwest. Speaking of the Kentucky Derby, there are 85 points up for grabs, with 50 going to the winner in the Grade 2 Risen Star at the Fairgrounds today. The first three finishers of their LeCompte, led by the victorious Midnight Bourbon, lead a full field that includes Remington Park Springboard Mile winner Senior Buscador. Out in Northern California, Rum Ballot will start a synthetic track route to the Run for the Roses in today's El Camino Real Derby at Golden Gate Fields, where 10 points are awarded to the winner. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Back hour two of this three-hour Equine Forum show rolling on. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, a chilly Saturday morning here in the Bluegrass. Not going to get much better over the next several days, but don't worry, spring is coming. 35 days from today, the first day of spring, and here's another thought to warm you up. 77 days, 8 hours, 43 minutes, and now just 47 seconds until the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 1st, beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. Going to be a lot to get to on this show this morning before we continue to talk about the Kentucky Derby Trail. If you missed any portion of the first hour, well, all you have to do is head back to our website after I finish up this morning at 11 Eastern and check out the podcast of the entire show. It's there at horseracingradio.net. You can hear the interview with it, the Big A did with Steve Asmussen in the first half of the program, and then hear from Laurel Racing Secretary Jillian Tulloch talking about their Saturday program with those two Grade 3 events coming up later today. Yeah, it's a great day of racing around the country, and one person who has certainly left his mark on thoroughbred racing and has now left this world, passing away on Sunday at the age of 75, is longtime NYRA announcer Marshall Cassidy, who served as the New York Racing Association race caller from 1979 to 1990. Current NYRA announcer John Embriel will be the first to tell you that Marshall had a huge influence on his career. And he now joins me to remember Marshall Cassidy. Johnny, thanks for taking a little time. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Mike. It's my pleasure to be with you, and wish it was under different circumstances. Wish we were talking about Marshall while he was still with us, but certainly some great memories going back, and what an influence he was on me and what a mentor he was. I can just tell you that if it wasn't for him, wherever I've gotten, it wouldn't have happened. He spent time with me. He was generous. He was always there, and I couldn't have asked for somebody better to have in the booth when I first arrived than him to get me through those early years.
I talked earlier, Johnny, that the only time I had the chance to speak with Marshall was back in 2016. I called him to ask him to join me on this program, and he answered the phone with that distinctive voice and that delivery that only Marshall Cassidy had. And I was blown away. I will never forget that phone call, and I'll never forget the interview we did on Travers Morning with him. It was one of the more special things I've been part of in my radio career.
Yeah, that voice will be with us forever with the race calls that we have of his, and and that's just the way he was. I mean, when he said hello, like that. I'm not even going to try to imitate him. I'll leave that to Frank Miramonte or Anthony or somebody like that. But he was a formal man, an extremely polite man, and I guess you could almost say that his race calls were kind of formal. I mean, but certainly no one more accurate than Marshall. And I thought about a few things this week, after he passed, that, boy, he wasn't shy about calling photo finishes. I'll tell you that. He was extremely accurate in that as well as the race calls. And I'm not sure if your audience, if all of them are completely aware of one thing that he did in 1980 with the Olympics. Do you know about that one, Mike?
He told that story when he joined me in 2016, but go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, it was the famous game, Do You Believe in Miracles? Yes, the Al Michaels game was actually Friday night. The game for the gold medal was on Sunday afternoon. I'm going to say around 3 o'clock, don't really remember. And in the middle of the call, whatever race it might have been, Marshall says, and the U.S. wins the gold. And then he went back to the call. and at that time, the TV was behind him. So he had to turn around and look and see that, you know, that it was official. It was a game the United States beat Finland in. And he put that in the call. And, I mean, I think everybody's aware of and knows of New York's easy goer, you know, winning the Belmont Stakes. I mean, that's probably his most notable call. And the other thing I thought about, Mike, was that, you know, he was there at a time, and he had Frank Dwyer was his backup. I called some races for him, you know, to fill in every so often. But he didn't take a lot of days off. I'll tell you that. It wasn't like, you know, some guys in the winter went to Florida to Gulfstream or took time off or whatever. I just don't remember him taking a lot of time off. So he had a voice to burn, I'll tell you that. He really had a voice that just stayed with him. I remember him getting laryngitis. And like I said, those were the days. We were running 6 days a week a lot. And, boy, he was always there. He was always there with his trademark calls.
Well, thank you for telling that Olympic story. That was not the story I was thinking of that he told in 2016, so I had not heard that story. Fantastic stuff talking about the late Marshall Cassidy. Johnny, you started by talking about the influence that he had on you, and he became a mentor to you back in the 1980s. What kind of teacher was Marshall Cassidy?
He was an outstanding teacher because he would listen, and literally, he would... I would go to an office on the same level as the announcer's booth and record, and I'd have a recorder with me, and I'd call the race into the recorder, and right after that, and this went on, this happened a lot, that he would take the time to listen to it anyway. So I would do the call into the recorder and go into the booth. He'd watch the replay with me as he played my call, and the other reason that he was a good teacher and a good mentor is that he didn't pull any punches. If you messed up, if I messed up in the call that he was listening to, he told me, and that's very important. He didn't sugarcoat it. He was nice if he thought I did a good job, but he was also blunt and straight to the point if he thought that I should do this or suggested I do that. And those two reasons primarily. Listening literally and being straight on and honest with me as and analyzing my calls.
You know, Marshall retired as the announcer at NYRA in 1990, so we have had plenty of time to reflect upon what he meant to the sport and his legacy. But whenever somebody passes away, it seems that comes up again. So how will John Imbriel view Marshall's legacy, not just in New York but in the sport?
I think twofold, Mike. When you know somebody personally, you take it beyond just the professional relationship and thoughts that you have about him. He was as nice and as generous a man, you know, that I've ever been around, and how lucky I was to have him around as the race caller for the first 10 or 11 years. I mean, he started in the spring of 79, and I started in November of 79. So Marshall started as the head race caller when Chick passed away suddenly. So, you know, it was the timing for me was perfect. And then you take it from a personal standpoint where he was just so kind and conscientious of being kind to other people. I think I read it somewhere that, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but when a lady entered the room, if Marshall was seated, he would stand up. And he was just that kind of an individual. And, you know, I'm going to just remember the good memories and miss him a lot that he's not here anymore. But I've certainly got a lot of memories of and positive ones of Marshall Cassidy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And two words that I have heard used to describe Marshall over the past several days: class and gentleman. And Johnny, I would use those two words to describe you as well, my friend, and really appreciate you taking a little time to look back on Marshall Cassidy and share some stories and talk about what he meant to you. He will be missed. There's no doubt about it. And can't thank you enough for taking time to do this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, John Embriel, NYRA announcer, looking back on his good friend and mentor, Marshall Cassidy. Larry Colmus from NBC took time to join me yesterday, record an interview, and he did the same thing. He shared his thoughts and his perspective on Marshall Cassidy. Larry, shortly after the news came out on Sunday that Marshall had passed away, you had sent out a tweet, and I thought it was really spot on. You said, "Marshall was a legend. I grew up listening to him and admiring him. When I started working at NYRA, he became a friend. Annual Saratoga dinners with Marshall Cassidy and Sonny Taylor was a favorite tradition of mine. Rest in peace, Marshall." You summed it up beautifully. When you think about Marshall Cassidy, what are some of the stories and the things that come to mind for you?
When I was a little kid, you know, that was the guy that we were listening to all the time. My buddies and I, we would ride around and you know, going to these different racetracks, and instead of listening to music, I have tapes of race calls. And, you know, many of them was calls from Marshall Cassidy. And we would, you know, my buddy Kenny, who I went to high school with, you know, he would get all these calls in his head, and he would remember, you know, Marshall Cassidy's calls to the letter, you know. And it was pretty funny that one day, once I became the guy that called the races for NYRA, my buddy Kenny, who was visiting me at Saratoga, he came into the booth, and Marshall at the time was a placing judge. And you know, he was upstairs, and I said, "Oh, I've got an idea." So I came down, went up to see Marshall first, and I said, "Marshall, can you come down to the announcer's booth? I want you to meet somebody." And he comes down, and I said to my buddy Kenny, I said, "Kenny, I'd like you to meet my friend Marshall Cassidy." Well, you could have like said the Pope or something like that. I mean, he almost fell over when he got the chance to meet Marshall Cassidy, and the two of them just kept talking back and forth. And my buddy is giving these you know, Marshall race calls word for word, and Marshall just absolutely loved it. So he kept coming back to the booth between every race to see him. And the next day, when Kenny wasn't there, Marshall looked around and goes, "Where's Kenny?" it was just really cool, and you know, just the guy could not have been any nicer to me, and he had so many stories of his days in that booth at Saratoga, and little intricacies that helped me along the way for sure.
Yeah, as a fellow race caller, what is it that you admired most about Marshall Cassidy on a professional level?
He was so distinctive, and everything had to be exactly pronounced correctly. And I'm sort of like that myself, but he really was. And I was just listening the other day to one of his race calls, and it was never Angel Cordero. It was always Angel Cordero Jr. And it wasn't Richard Migliore. It was Richard Migliore. Because that was the proper Italian pronunciation, and Marshall would be so succinct in his race calls, and everything had to be perfect as far as accuracy, pronunciation, and he was amazing. He told me at Saratoga he used to go to the back between races where you could see the paddock, and he would look at the jockeys coming out and start memorizing the silts and getting them in his head before they ever came onto the racetrack. I ended up doing that at Kentucky Downs later when I worked there, because Marshall had mentioned that. And that was the easiest way to prepare, because Kentucky Downs was so hard that, you know, you really needed to know the horses. So I thought of what Marshall said and said, "Hey, I could do that here." And, so that certainly was a big help. But he just was a special guy, and his race calling style was his own, and it was really, really good.
How about on a personal level? In that tweet that I just read, you mentioned the dinners at Saratoga and the times that you would break bread with Marshall and how special that was to you. How would you describe Marshall, the person, not the caller, but the person?
Just a gentleman. I mean, he is like the definition of a gentleman. He was very, very proper in how he talked, but at the same time, he had a really cool sense of humor. You know, and you never really thought of Marshall Cassidy as being funny, but he was. And, you know, we would have we would have dinners. I remember the last dinner I had with him, Sonny couldn't make it. It was just Marshall and I at the Wishing Well. And it was just such a great experience, just sitting there and breaking bread and listening to old stories with Marshall Cassidy and just to think that I had listened to him as a kid, and then I had the job that he had at the time, and he was just so nice to me, and just a guy that had so many great stories and had been through so much, and it was just fun to be around him, and every time I saw him, it would just put a smile on my face.
I remember the one time that I did have the opportunity to interview Marshall. It was back in 2016, Travers Morning. We were hosting this Equine Forum show, and it was Jude Feld and myself. And after the interview, we both looked at each other. It was one of those moments, one of those interviews that you kind of knew as you were doing it that this was something that you had to cherish, that it was special because you were talking to somebody that had an impact on so many people and on this sport in so many ways. It really just transcended the show in a lot of different ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the one thing that Marshall told me, which I think is pretty cool, everybody remembers the famous Chick Anderson call of Secretariat and the Belmont Stakes. And I knew that Chick was the network TV caller and that Dave Johnson was the track announcer for that race. But Marshall told me that he also called the race for a network in Puerto Rico, which I thought was interesting. So he actually called Secretariat Belmont too, which I thought was very neat and something I had not known. So there's so many Marshall stories that you learn over the years, and just was a super cool guy.
Yeah, and he has the call of the Belmont Stakes in 1989 when Easy Goer winning, and New York's Easy Goer, and that's a call that's going to go down in history as one of the great, most memorable calls in our sport. That's kind of, I guess, would you consider that his signature call, or were there others that you would say, hey, look at this call that Marshall did, this was special too?
I think that is his signature call. I think it's the one that everybody remembers the most because it was such a cool situation with Sunday Silence going for the Triple Crown, and here's the hometown horse, Easy Goer, that everybody was waiting for him to beat Sunday Silence. It sounded like Marshall was kind of rooting for him a little bit, and he did do that the famous New York's Easy Goer in front. And every call it always ended with in front, which is the way they did it back then, and that was pretty cool. That to me, that was the call I'll always remember. The thing I always remember too about his calls is I don't think I've ever heard anybody get through a 12-horse field faster than Marshall Cassidy, or a 5-horse field slower than Marshall Cassidy. He would like turn up the speed and then turn it back down, just depending either on his mood or the flow of the race. But he could rattle off 12 horses like you wouldn't believe, and then all of a sudden he'd have these long paused calls. That's what made Marshall.
Well, he was special. He will be missed. And Larry, I can't thank you enough for spending a little time to remember Marshall Cassidy here this morning. Appreciate it, my friend. And I know that you're going to miss him as well.
Absolutely. Anytime, Mike.
All right. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to Valentine's Day. Yeah, how's that for a segue? We'll turn our attention to Valentine's Day as we take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, and that's all presented by Lane's End and by Keeneland. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Broken Vow. a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
A.P. Valentine is in behind a wall of horses as they approach the top of the stretch. And here comes City Zip, and he's mounting his bid, but he's still got a lot to do. He's six lengths behind as Point Given hits the top of the stretch with a tenuous lead. Trail the Fox is there on the outside. A.P. Valentine trying to come through on the rail. Yonaguska's in the clear on the outside. Here he comes. Here comes Yonaguska on the outside. And A.P. Valentine down toward the rail. A.P. Valentine has squeezed through to take the lead. It's going to be A.P. Valentine. And he's going to be the winner of the 129th Champagne by two lengths over Point Given and Yonaguska finishing third.
How about that field? The 2000 Champagne, Tom Durkin with the call. Point Given, Yonaguska the winner. AP Valentine, a horse tailor-made for tomorrow's Valentine's Day celebration. The son of AP Indy was foaled February 14th, 1998. Owned by Rick Pitino's Old Memorial Stable and trained by Hall of Famer Nick Zito, A.P. Valentine would follow up that win in the Grade 1 Champagne as a juvenile with runner-up efforts in both the Preakness and Belmont Stakes the following year. And, of course, that leads me into a special Valentine's edition of our weekly Stroll Through Racing History with host Kurt Becker. This segment presented by Keeneland and Lane's End. Enjoy.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Franz Valentine was a California-bred filly who grabbed the attention of the racing world at the inaugural Breeders' Cup in 1984. She scored an upset win, and then a few minutes later, she was disqualified. And so she became a footnote to Breeders' Cup history. But that day was only the beginning of what became an illustrious career for Franz Valentine as both a racehorse and a broodmare. Despite her name, Franz Valentine was not born on Valentine's Day, but on February 26, 1982. She was named by owner-breeder Earl Scheib in honor of his wife, Fran. Winning three of her first five starts, including a minor stakes by 19 lengths, Franz Valentine entered the 1984 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies off a 14-length loss in the Grade 1 Oakleaf Stakes. The crowd of 64,000 at Hollywood Park on Breeders' Cup Day dismissed her at 74-1, believing that she was not Grade 1 caliber. But they were wrong. Trained by Joe Manzi and with Patrick Valenzuela aboard, Franz Valentine was in perfect striking position as the field turned for home, and she made the most of it.
Here's Franz Valentine on the outside, and Dusty Hart is there toward the rail, and Bess Arabian, she's a beaten filly today. Savannah Dancer, they're coming to the wire. Outstandingly, she's charging on the inside. They're coming to the finish. Franz Valentine, outstandingly. Franz Valentine, a huge upset here. A huge upset. Franz Valentine.
It was a shocking upset and an emotional victory. Fran Scheib had passed away earlier that year as the filly was beginning her racing career. And now Fran's namesake was about to enter the winner's circle at the very first Breeders' Cup. But there was a problem. Franz Valentine had slammed into Pirate's Glow at the top of the stretch, and the stewards had noticed. The inquiry sign was posted. Earl Scheib turned to his trainer and said, "They're not going to let us into the winner's circle." And he was correct. The stewards disqualified Franz Valentine and placed her 10th. Earl Scheib later said, "I was crushed. It broke my heart, but I kept my mouth shut and walked away." There is a dubious distinction in being the first horse ever disqualified from a win in a Breeders' Cup race, or for that matter, in a $1 million thoroughbred event. But there would be better days ahead for Franz Valentine, and they were to come early in her three-year-old season. There would be a win in the Las Virgenes at Santa Anita, followed by a Grade 1 victory in the Santa Susana. Franz Valentine then shipped to Kentucky, where she finished a disappointing fifth in the Ashland Stakes at Keeneland. But regular rider Pat Valenzuela was not available for that race, having been briefly sidelined with a shoulder injury. On May 3, 1985, Valenzuela and Franz Valentine were reunited at Churchill Downs for the 111th running of the Kentucky Oaks. Sent off the second betting choice at 3-1, Franz Valentine fought off 40-1 long shot Foxy Dean to win by 3/4 of a length in stakes record time. Earl Scheib could not resist some good-natured fun when he said, quote, "You ain't done nothing until you've beaten these Kentucky hard boots on their own turf," end quote. 2 months later, Franz Valentine would add another Grade 1 win to her resume with a victory in the Hollywood Oaks. The following year, in 1986, she would post a runner-up finish in the Breeders' Cup Distaff behind eventual Horse of the Year, Lady Secret. Franz Valentine retired from the racetrack early in 1987, with 13 wins and 9 other finishes in the money from 37 starts. Her $1.3 million in earnings made her the richest California-bred filly of all time. And her legacy would be enhanced beyond the racetrack, as Franz Valentine found her way into the prestigious broodmare band of George Strawbridge Jr. In fact, she would become the dam of the Augustan Stables homebred turf star With Anticipation, who scored 5 Grade 1 wins and earned $2.6 million. A Grade 1 winner on dirt and a Grade 1 producer on the turf, Franz Valentine enjoyed an accomplished career which flourished in the years following that Breeders' Cup disqualification as a 2-year-old. She died in October of 2007 at age 25 at Dairy Meeting Farm in Cochranville, Pennsylvania, having proved that she was not only a special filly to those who knew her, but that she also belonged at the Grade 1 level. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, my thanks to Kurt for another fantastic feature, and I thought it would be appropriate to stick with the Valentine's Day theme for the remainder of this segment as I welcome in horse racing's favorite Valentine, Mark Cassie, who will celebrate his 60th birthday tomorrow on Valentine's Day. Mark, happy early birthday, my friend.
Thanks, Mike. I've been called a lot of things and been introduced a lot of ways, but that's the first time I've ever been introduced back way.
Well, you know, it's a shame that we're not doing this interview in person. I was going to get you some chocolate-covered strawberries, maybe some flowers, that, you know, something along those
lines.
Okay,
now you're scaring me.
You know, hey, let me ask you this question, Mark. We threw a poll question out there on our Twitter feed. So many people are weighing in. What is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? And people have choices: flowers, chocolates, dinner, or other. How about for you? It's your birthday. What's your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day?
I actually feel sorry for my wife because her Valentine's days are not as good because of it's my birthday. You know, I'm like, it's my birthday. This is a special day for me, you know, but I don't know. My wife usually makes me a cheesecake that I love for my birthday. So that would be my favorite gift.
Well, when I reached out to you to ask you to join me on the program, you told me it's a very busy morning for you, and I told you I wouldn't keep you very long. And that, I guess my hook was I just want to squeeze in one more interview with you while you're still in your 50s. We've done so many.
Yeah, you got me on that one. How could I
last one
turn you down on that?
My first interview with you as a 50-year-old, as I turned 50 about 10 days ago. So we have something in common. We're both in our 50s for the first time in the history of doing an interview together.
Okay, well, I like your side better than mine, but okay.
Well, listen, the reason you're going to be so busy, Mark, 16 horses entered at 5 different tracks over the next 2 days. You've got 3 running in greatest stakes at the fairgrounds today, so let's go ahead and start there and talk about those horses. And it kicks off with the Grade 3 Mineshaft and Enforceable, a horse that took you to the Kentucky Derby last year. He comes out of that big allowance win. Tell me about Enforceable.
Well, you know, Enforceable, finally, the Enforceable we've been looking for some time, finally showed up in his last start. If I told you where it came from, knew where it came from, I'd be lying. you know, we just we kept thinking it was there, and I think maybe just because he finally was able to get in kind of a racing cycle. I'm hoping that's what it is, and he's in this cycle. He's an extremely happy horse. He looks great. You know, he'll need to come back with that same kind of effort to be competitive. But at least we know that he has it in him if he so desires.
I remember talking with you last year. I think it was after he won the LeCompte, and he was looking at going into the Risen Star. Of course, he ran second in the Risen Star. But we were talking about his talent and his ability, and you could hear it in your voice. You've always been extremely high on this horse. Has he been a little bit frustrating, though, because you know he has it in him, and he just doesn't always show it in the afternoons?
Well, you know, obviously, if you saw his pedigree, you know, from before he even started training, you'd have to put him in high regards. And then I thought, you know, when we had him as a young horse in Ocala, he moved so well and he did things kind of effortlessly. But his 2-year-old campaign was definitely disappointing. It was like he wouldn't focus. And, you know, it's just been one thing after another. He wasn't happy after the Louisiana Derby, and we brought him home. And, you know, we ask a lot of them to run in the Kentucky Derby off of only one prior start. But and his race really in the Derby wasn't terrible. I mean, I think he beat half the field. But if you look at his pedigree, if you look at him, I said all along, he reminds me, I have a 17-year-old son that is 6'1 and weighs 150 pounds. I was like, when he ever fills out, he's going to be a monster. And that's kind of where I've always felt about him, forcible. And we're starting to see that now. He's went from, you know, a young boy to a teenager to becoming a man. And if he can continue this progression, he could be one of the better older handicap horses in North America.
Can horses, Mark, kind of take it to another level after a big confidence-building win like he had last time out? Can this springboard him to bigger things up the road?
Mike, that's always been my belief. It's so much of what I do, you know, trying to get confidence in them, find them races where they can have a breakout performance like he did. And a lot of times it will springboard them forward.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're hoping. I've done it many, many times in the past and had it work. I guess I'll be able to tell you this afternoon later on, you know, did it move him forward? So I think it will, but that's what horse racing's all about, and that's why, we've just got to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll find out. That's the Mineshaft Stakes and Forcible. You come back in the following race, the Grade 3 Fairground Stakes, which is on the grass, Longshot Peace Achieved, who he's a Grade 3 winner, won the Bourbon last year or 2 years ago at Keeneland in 2019, and now kind of getting back on track again, at least hoping to get back on track again in Graded Stakes competition. Tell me about Peace Achieved.
Well, Peace Achieved is a horse that, you know, did very well as a 2-year-old. And then really disappointed me in the Breeders' Cup. I thought he was sitting on a big race, and he just threw a dull effort. The problem with a horse like Peace Achieved, and we run into this, which is very frustrating a lot of times, is you get a horse, he wins a lot of races. He wins some races as a young horse, and then he has an injury. But when you try to bring him back, there's no races for him unless you run in stakes. And it's tough. It's tough to get that confidence back, just like we talked about in Forcible. You want to try to get some confidence in these horses, and it's impossible the way races are done anymore. And so he's just never caught a break since then. He's had a little minor little injuries and hasn't been able to get on a race schedule today he at least is going to, you know, he had a race, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So he is finally getting to put a couple races back to back. And I think you'll see a improvement in his effort today. Will it be good enough? Maybe not just yet, but I think he should continue to move forward.
Yeah, definitely on the right path is a piece achieved in that Fairground Stakes. And the last one in graded stakes today, Mark, is in the Grade 2 Rachel Alexandra Stakes. It's race 12, and you send out Super Sensational, who suffered her first defeat last time out, running second in the Silver Bullet Day. But, again, when you talk about talented fillies, she has to be right at the top of your list right now.
She is. You know, she. I love Curlin. I've always said that. She's just a classy filly. I was okay with her last start. I think she learned some things. It was her time around two turns. She got knocked around a little bit early, made us, you know, I thought Declan, you know, Declan's a young rider, but he was smart. He didn't panic. He let her get herself together. I told him, I said, Declan, the last thing I want to happen is for her to be up on the lead and weaken down the stretch, down the lane. I said, I would like to see her finish. And so he sat back. He, you know, let her, and the pace wasn't all that fast, but he sat there, relaxed, and she did finish. Hopefully today we have a little better break. They don't come down on top of us. We got knocked around pretty good in the last race. You know, he can keep a little more of a forward position. And you know, she has to move forward. This is her chance to tell us whether she can go two turns. You know, a lot of Curlins can. She is out of an Indian Charlie mare, which sometimes will limit your distance. So today's a big day because today tells us whether we continue down the Oaks path or we start thinking about having a really good miler or sprinter.
Yeah, well, she's been highly regarded from the very beginning, a $725,000 yearling purchase at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale back in 2019. So we know that she can run. She's proven that. Now she has to prove that she can take the next step along that road to the Kentucky Oaks. Mark, listen, I told you I wouldn't keep you. I'm up against a break anyway, but really appreciate the visit. Thank you for taking the time. Good luck today. And, again, happy birthday tomorrow, my friend.
I appreciate it. Always enjoy the conversation. Thanks, Mike.
All right, great stuff. Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, I was thinking as I was getting ready for the show, and I said, okay, how do we follow up the Franz Valentine feature with something related to Valentine's Day? So Mark Cassie was a perfect fit, being a Valentine's baby, if you will. And I got thinking, I said, let me look up some horses or some other notable people that have ties to Valentine's Day. And of course you heard AP Valentine winning the Champagne just a short time ago. You heard that race clip and Tom Durkin with the call. There was a filly named Valentine's Day who has won 4 races for Brett Calhoun down in Texas. She, of course, was born on February 14th and named Valentine's Day. Her owners love partnership interests. So that kind of has a nice little tie-in there. Grade 1 winners Cupid and Heart to Heart. How about those two names for Valentine's Day tie-ins? And one other birthday of note in thoroughbred racing on February 14th, the late Johnny Longden, born on Valentine's Day, just like Mark Cassie. So a few things to keep in mind there as you're getting ready for tomorrow's Valentine's Day. Don't forget to weigh in on the poll question at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. When I come back, it's time for this week's Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift and my visit with trainer Todd Fincher talking about Senor Buscador in today's Risen Star. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify, a 4-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-Year-Old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the 3-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile, and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the grade three poker and dominating the competition in the grade one Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Senior Buscador. His run has begun with a quarter mile to go on the springboard. Joe Frazier grabs the lead coming off the turn, six furlongs, a minute 12.51. Joe Frazier up front. Cowan is free, and so is Senor Buscador on the outside. Senor Buscador, he was last going to the turn. He's first with less than a furlong to go. Senor Buscador letting him roll in the springboard, and he'll pull clear to win it by six. Cowan is their second, battle for third. Safa's Day and Red and Wild in a photo.
Big win for Senor Buscador last time out to remain perfect in his young career. Now 2-for-2 after winning the springboard mile. That was at Remington Park on December 18th of last year. He makes his three-year-old debut in the Risen Star Stakes at the Fairgrounds later today. Is he among Bobby Newman's top five? Let's find out. It is Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. They're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
The road to the Kentucky Derby made three stops last weekend in New York, Florida, and California. Let's start at Aqueduct with the Grade 3 Withers Stakes, where 10 Derby qualifying points awaited the winner, along with the lion's share of the $250,000 purse. Chad Brown's risk-taking was very impressive, winning a maiden race at a mile and an eighth, and he was sent off the betting favorite in this tougher 9-furlong affair. He settled about four lengths behind Jerome winner Capo Kane early on, rallied wide on the far turn, then drew away down the lane to win handily over late-running Overtook. Pace-setting Capo Kane checked in third, and the final time was 1:51.4. Look for risk-taking next in the Wood Memorial on April 3rd. Tampa Bay Downs featured the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis at a mile and a 16th. Known Agenda came in well-rested off his third-place finish in last year's Remsen Stakes, and he was bet down to 3-2 favoritism. But it was the Bill Mott duo of Candyman Rocket and Nova Rags who stole the headlines. The former crushed maiden sprinting at Gulfstream in his previous start, and he got a perfect stalking trip from Junior Alvarado despite breaking from an outside post. He opened up at the top of the stretch and had plenty left to hold off his stablemate. Candyman Rocket's final time was 1:44.1. He earned 10 Derby points with the win and likely will point for the Tampa Bay Derby on March 6th. Santa Anita held the 7-furlong San Vicente, and Bob Baffert trainees dominated from the start. Concert Tour was able to outduel his barnmate Freedom Fighter in a better-than-look time of 1:24 flat, and we'll look for him to stretch out for his next test. With the postponement of the Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn due to weather, there are two major stakes for three-year-olds this weekend. Fairgrounds holds the Grade 2 Risen Star today, and the winner will get 50 Derby points, almost assuring a spot in the Kentucky Derby starting gate. Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, and Mandaloon return off their 1-2-3 finish in the LeCompte, but the waters are a tad deeper today. Senor Buscador returns off a smashing win in Remington's Springboard Mile, while Keep Me In Mind is fresh off a win in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, although he may await Oaklawn Southwest next Saturday. Golden Gate's signature event, the El Camino Real Derby, is also set for a mile and an eighth today. 10 Derby points go to the winner. Graded Stakes Place runners Ron Bauer and Petruccio are both on the improve, and they should be the favorites shipping up from Southern California. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Vino Rosso, the most accomplished racehorse by leading sire Curlin, an undefeated two-year-old and major Kentucky Derby prep race winner as a three-year-old, multiple Grade 1 winner Vino Rosso won the Eclipse Award for Older Dirt Male at 4 after a dominant victory in the 2019 Breeders' Cup Classic, just like his sire Curlin a dozen years prior.
And it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso!
His negative 6 1/4 thoroughbred number marks the fastest in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic. Champion Vino Rosso, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality. Undefeated, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champ should run next Saturday in the Southwest at Oaklawn. Number two, Life is Good. Undefeated Son of Into Mischief. Look for him in the Grade 2 San Felipe March 6th at Santa Anita. Number three is Senor Buscador. He's also undefeated in two starts. We'll see him today in the Risen Star. Numbers four and five, we could see both of them square off in the Grade 2 Rebel at Oaklawn on March 13th. They are Caddo River and Concert Tour. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Well, Senor Buscador could find himself among Bobby Newman's top five if he could find a way to pull off a victory in today's Risen Star Stakes at the Fairgrounds. That is what trainer Todd Fincher is hoping for, and he joins me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Happy Risen Star Day, my friend.
Thank you.
Look, you come here with an undefeated horse. It's your first trip ever to the Fairgrounds, a horse that can really, really run. That effort last time out in the Springboard Mile was extremely impressive. What gives you the confidence he belongs with these horses today in the Risen Star?
Well, you're never confident with a horse that only has a two-race resume and you're facing, there's a lot of things as a trainer you're concerned about, but the horse is very talented and doing great. You move into a new track, he's just been here a couple days, different surface, tougher competition probably, and a lot of question marks, but yeah, he's doing excellent, and we expect him to run really good today.
When did you first know you had a runner on your hand with this horse?
You know, he was a real slow developing horse. He always worked okay in the mornings, but we don't push him, but he's always done what we ask, but nothing up above and beyond. And then last couple of works, we asked him a little bit to finish the workout, and he did that great. So we went to Remington thinking we had a pretty dang good horse. We didn't like the 5 1/2 furlong right distance, but we were kind of hamstrung, so we went for the race, and after that race, it was eye-popping too. So then we stretched him out to a mile in a short turnaround, and he went above our expectations for sure.
Horses like Senor Buscador, who are deep closers, they have a tendency to get your heart rate up a little bit because, first of all, you don't know if they're going to get there in time. And he makes that late run, comes from far back. He's done it in two races now where he's come from dead last. But, Todd, he seems to make his move at the right time where he's in position turning for home. And that's a huge thing for a horse like Senor Buscador.
Yeah, it could be very advantageous to have that running style. I've had horses that were very extremely talented, horses that were the opposite, that were too aggressive and you couldn't make them relax. And him, he just does that on his own. He just relaxes without a problem. He just waits on the rider's cue to ask him to go, and he does it. So, if all horses were that push button, it would be a lot easier, but like I said, I've had some the complete opposite, and it was a major detriment to their careers,
Well, yeah, that's the flip side to it, is they come from so far back that they don't get there in time. But he has that big turn of foot. Going into the Risen Star today, do you just let him lag at the back, and when Luis says go, let him make his run like he's done in the past two starts, or do you try to get him in the race a little earlier?
Well, you know, when they've only run two times and he's got more speed than we've seen, you just don't know for sure what the horse is going to do. The rider's got to be up there to, you know, if he gets too aggressive to slow him down, or if he gets too lackadaisical, he needs to rush him just a little. So that's going to be up to Luis, and that's why they make the big bucks.
Yeah, it'll be his decision, and Todd Fincher has done everything he can do to get Senor Buscador ready for this test in the Risen Star today. Todd, listen, you're when people think about trainers in the sport that are on the Triple Crown Trail, they think about Todd Pletcher, they think about Bob Baffert, Steve Asmussen. Todd, you've trained over 1,100 winners in your career. You've been on the Derby Trail before in 2018 with Runaway Ghost, who won the Sunland Derby. You know how to get a horse ready for a big race like this. What's it like being back on the trail again?
Well, coming from New Mexico like I do, we don't get the quality of horses at the Pletchers and Baffert's. You know, we'll get one every once in a while come through our barn, but it's a long shot even to get one in a lifetime, being at our location, you know. And sometimes people go for the big names and don't really investigate and find out different trainers or different opportunities, and they just, you know, go for the big names. So there's several good horsemen in New Mexico, although, you know, I know New Mexico don't have a great reputation, but it's a once in a, you would think it'd be a once in a lifetime opportunity for someone like me, but to have it twice in 3 years is pretty incredible.
Yeah, when Runaway Ghost won the Sunland Derby, you were automatically thinking Kentucky Derby, but then, of course, he had the injury and was laid off for quite a while before you got him back to the races. How gut-wrenching was that, to know that you were that close to competing in the Kentucky Derby, and all of a sudden the rug gets pulled out from underneath you?
Yeah, it's a shot to the gut for sure, but, you know, I've been in this business my entire life, and you just got to train yourself not to get too high, too excited, because anything can happen in a blink of an eye. And it was a shot to the gut, but it happens, you know, and they're not machines, they're animals, and any minor thing can happen, and you got to take care of the horse first. So hopefully we'll get qualified today and we won't have that same issue in a few months.
Yeah, do you let yourself think that far ahead to the first Saturday in May, or is it one race at a time for you?
Oh, you of course you think about it, because that's everybody's aspirations. You know, if your goals are high, that's your aspirations, and it's aspirations for your clients and their horse. But, yeah, you can only take it one work at a time, basically, not necessarily one race at a time. So, yeah, you're always, every time you work a horse or run a horse, the first thing you come in the barn is you want to go check their legs and make sure everything's all right. Doing this for so long, we know it, anything can happen at any time. So that's our first concern.
Well, Senor Buscador certainly has all the talent in the world, and he's in capable hands with Todd Fincher, who joins me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Todd, what's the key to victory in today's Risen Star? You're in with some pretty good horses. What's the key to victory, other than, of course, running faster than everybody else?
Yeah, who knows? Track got quite a bit of rain. Looks like it's drying out. Should be by race time. It should be a pretty good track. You know, it's up to the horse. I mean, we've done all we can do. The horse and the rider are going to be the ones out there performing, and you know, slow pace possible, but the distance I think he'll like. Obviously you got to have the quality horse to do it, and get a clean trip would be very helpful as well. So I don't know what the key is. Just hopefully we have the best horse and everything goes smoothly.
Well, the name translates to Mr. Seeker, and he's seeking to become a major player along the road to the Kentucky Derby later today for trainer Todd Fincher. Todd, really appreciate the visit. I know it's a busy morning. Good luck today, and let's go get it done with Senor Buscador.
Okay, we're on it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Todd Fincher here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Got a shot. Talented horse. He can really motor home. He can finish. His late pace numbers, you know I love those in the Bris PPs. They're rock solid. This horse will be moving at the end. If that's good enough, I don't know. But he can finish. And, again, Todd Fincher, very, very capable. More than 1,100 wins to his credit in his career, including that greatest stakes win in the 2018 Sunland Derby. I'll be back to get you ready for the third hour of the program right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
The COVID-19 pandemic continues to weigh on us. While we all feel helpless, remember there is much we can do to protect ourselves, our family and friends, all of us. Simply get in the habit of wearing a mask and maintain 6 feet of space between yourself and others in public. Wash your hands often and stay home if you feel sick. It takes all of us to combat COVID-19. Go to cdcfoundation.org to learn more.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that we can give our daughters everything they need to grow and learn. But not every child can focus on classes and play dates.
Nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. face hunger. That's 1 in 6. School lunch might be their only meal each day. And it's heartbreaking to imagine any child going to bed hungry. We're dreaming of a perfect day when kids can smile, play, and just be kids without worrying about where their next meal will come from. Feeding America is working to make that perfect day a reality.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. That food is given to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about doing things that make an ordinary day extraordinary. Learning to play an instrument, building a sandcastle, hosting tea parties. Hunger should never be an obstacle to growing up.
You can help end childhood hunger in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Don't forget, next week, it is the return of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. If you know somebody in the world of thoroughbred racing you feel is an unsung hero, send me an email about that person and tell me their story. It's mike@horseracingradio.net. You can nominate an unsung hero for that segment, and I'll do my best to have them featured on the program next week. Poll question today, what is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And right now, it looks like just a simple dinner out or dinner in is the winner in that category. Well, that's going to do it for the first 2 hours of the Equine Forum, but there is still plenty more to come this morning as I continue all the way up to 11 a.m. Eastern. I'll kick off the third hour of the show with this week's edition of our popular new segment, In the Room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one conversation with journeyman jockey Junior Alvarado. And you'll hear from trainer Owen Hardy as he prepares to saddle Godolphin's Javonica in today's El Camino Real. And I'll give you the chance to be part of the show as I open up the phone lines in our new weekly call-in segment at 10:40 Eastern. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And on the far outside, Rombauer, and they're all coming down to the line. Dynamite, here comes Rombauer to run them down.
Don't know what caliber he is yet, you know. Obviously, running his Breeders' Cup race is very respectable. I don't think distance is going to be an issue with him. He's not a very big horse. He's got some good mechanics. He's got a foot. So we'll see. We'll run first time off the layout, going a mile and eighth on a synthetic surface, see what happens.
It's still Midnight Bourbon. Past the 16th, Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon, Vince LeComp.
He's a big, beautiful horse that had run some solid races as a two-year-old, but I definitely think that there's more of him, a lot more mature horse as a three-year-old, and he put it together in the LeComp and ran a very good race. You know, he's just a big, beautiful horse with a huge pedigree that has always been a gorgeous mover. And I think, obviously, we're, you know, very excited about the three-year-old program at Fairgrounds here in Louisiana. And mile and 16th LeComp, mile and an eighth Risen Star, and the mile and 3/16th Louisiana Derby sure should suit him.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Yeah, big weekend. Two Kentucky Derby prep races on the docket today, at least points races anyway. There are other prep races, other three-year-olds in action, not competing in either the El Camino Real at Golden Gate Fields or the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. The Southwest Stakes was postponed. That'll come your way next Saturday at Oaklawn, February 20th. Keep that in mind, that race will be next week at Oaklawn. Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Excited for this third hour of the show, too, because it is loaded. I told you as I was leading into it, you're going to hear In the Room with Sean Clancy. That kicks it off in just a couple of minutes. Owen Hardy going to be with me at 10:25 Eastern time. And then at the end of this hour, 10:40 Eastern, I'll open up the phone lines. You get the opportunity to be part of the show. That phone number, by the way, 888-966-4776. 888-966-HRRN. Don't call yet. Wait until 10:40, but I wanted to throw it out there so you had it ready when I open up the phone lines coming up in just a little bit. If you missed any portion of this show, the entire 3 hours will be available via podcast on our website after 11 a.m. Eastern. That's at horseracingradio.net. My interview in the last hour with Todd Fincher talking about Senor Buscador, and with Mark Cassie looking at his contenders in three graded stakes. Our weekly feature, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Keeneland and Lane Zend. That was included in hour two as well. Today's first bet, the horse you have a good chance to make some money with, was in the first half of the program, the first hour. That segment presented by First Bet and Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift. Our look back at the life and career of Marshall Cassidy was in hour two. And my interview with Jillian Tulloch, who is the racing secretary at Laurel, kind of got us started this morning in hour one, along with an interview with Steve Asmussen. So if you missed any of that, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. It is time now to go In the Room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. This week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with veteran rider Junior Alvarado.
Sharp
in victory and wrapped up by Junior Alvarado, as they stroll home in the Gotham.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Junior Alvarado. The 34-year-old Venezuelan native has won 1,788 races for $99 million in a 15-year career that began at Calder, went through Arlington Park, and is now firmly established on the New York circuit and the Florida winter circuit. For the first time in about 10 years, Junior, you're spending the winter in Florida. How's that feel? Got to be a heck of a lot warmer than Aqueduct, I guess.
Hi, Sean. Yeah, thanks so much first for, you know, inviting me to the program In the Room. And, yeah, you know, really happy here with the weather, you know, having like a wonderful weather so far, you know, and, you know, it's been very, very good here.
Yeah, you're having a strong meet at Gulfstream, and take me through the move to leave Aqueduct for the winter and go to Florida for the winter.
You know, it's the thing is, just, you know, I have been kind of like building it up little by little, you know. I think the last couple of years, you know, with, you know, I talked to my agent about coming or, you know, about coming here or staying in Aqueduct. So, you know, it was just a little hesitation. And, you know, when you're going to go somewhere like this, like here in Florida, you know, you don't have to have hesitation. You have to be ready 100% to do it, you know, 100% committed. And, you know, I just think this year, you know, kind of worked out having, you know, like I have two kids that are going to school, you know, so it was easy for me, you know, just to move here without getting them out of school. You know, they still can do it online, the school, and, you know, it was just, like I said, I mean, everything just worked out perfect this year. Like, you know, everything kind of lined up for me to make the move.
Yeah, and we talked about it years ago at Saratoga when you moved to New York. I mean, making those decisions to leave Arlington Park to go to New York and now to spend the winter in Florida, that's something that you put a lot of thought and process kind of into deciding if you're ready for it. And you obviously feel ready for it now.
Yes, you know, like I say, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a little quicker, you know. Sometimes, you know, you have to kind of wait the right time, and you know, like I said, I mean, just this time, you know, like any other time before when I moved from Arlington to New York, you know, I just, you know, it was just the right time, and you know, it just, like, you know, it shows that for me, you know, it was the right time because, you know, the way horses are running for me, the way the business are right here, you know, it's, you know, I've been very blessed, you know, to have a great opportunity since I moved here to Florida. So, you know, it's been working awesome so far.
Yeah, no doubt. You belong. Look, I mean, that's quite obvious. You've made your impact on the big stages. Take me through last weekend. Candyman Rocket winning the Sam Davis and Get Smokin' winning the Tampa Bay Stakes at Tampa Bay Downs. That must have felt good, those two horses. And talking about the future of those two.
Yes, you know, we'll start with Get Smokin'. You know, that's a horse that I've been, you know, watching for quite a while. You know, it's a horse that always run good. You know, it hasn't had that luck yet, you know, like to get the win in a big race. And I just thought, you know, this was a good race for him. You know, like it was a little, you know, even though it was, you know, a stake race, it was a little class relief for him, you know, with the company he was facing this time. And I mean, he proved it that way, you know. He's a nice call, you know, like he likes to be in the lead, you know. This time, you know, we set up a little off the speed this time, and, you know, he run great, you know. I think, you know, moving forward, you know, he's a horse that is going to be tough this year around, you know, if he stays sound. And Candy Rockman, you know, he's a horse, you know, still a baby, you know. Only was his third race, first time going that long in the distance, you know. We know how Tampa could be, you know, a little tricky. It's a track, you know, it gets a little tricky sometimes. And, you know, for a horse like him, you know, who's just, you know, it was only his third start and going long, you know, I thought he handled it pretty well, you know. So, you know, bright future there, you know, like I said, hopefully, you know, it's all about just stay sound from now on. You know, I think the talent is there, and you know, I'm pretty happy with what we have so far.
And it's February, three-year-olds, you're obviously looking ahead. I mean, do you have to kind of force yourself to not look too far ahead with a horse like that, thinking Kentucky Derby in May? I mean, is that something that's on your mind, or you just put that out of your mind?
No, I mean, you can avoid that. You know when you go, like as of right now, you're going to run those big races, you know, you ended up winning, you know, you're getting points for the Derby, you know, it just automatically goes into your head and, you know, it gets you excited, you know. It's definitely, you know, like the excitement around this time when you ride those three-year-old races, stakes, you know, you could end up with, you know, one of those horses for the Derby.
No question. Take us back to the beginning. Your dad was a jockey in Venezuela. Was it something that you always wanted to do growing up? Did you emulate him, kind of worship him as a jockey? Or what was that like? I mean, what was your childhood? Was it always, I'm going to be a jockey?
Yes, you know, since I have any memory about myself being, you know, that little, you know, I always wanted to be a jockey. You know, I think probably when I was 4 years old, I remember, still remember going to the track and you know, in the morning a couple of times with my brother. And then, you know, like, I don't remember me wanting to be something else other than jockey, you know. And I always, you know, like I said, I always look up to him, to my dad, and you know, and just, you know, it's been a dream so far.
And what's racing in Venezuela? You won your first race in 2005 at, I don't know if I can say this, La Rinconada on a horse named Estevana. I mean, what was that like? What was the racing like that there?
Yeah, you know, that actually was my first win crossing the wire first. But actually my first win, you know, it was a horse that I finished second, and I got, you know, I got put up. You know, that's what I say sometimes. I don't say because it doesn't count for me. I mean, it counts, but, you know, for me, it was just I wanted to cross the wire first for me to be the first win, you know. Like, yeah.
Of course.
But, yeah, you know, it's a little funny because my dad was the other way around. The first race that my dad won, he got the cue.
Wow.
Me, I was the other way around. You know, I finished second and I got put up first. So, you know, I always took it this way that, you know, it was probably like that I was going to be more lucky. and the business, you know. And, you know,
good question.
It's just been great, been amazing.
And the move to America, was that an easy move? Or was your dad behind that 100%? What was that like? Take me through that decision.
Yes, you know, it's, you know, I remember, you know, 2006, 2007, you know, those are, you know, like, I was doing great in Venezuela. I was, you know, fighting for being the apprentice of the year there. And my brother was here, and, you know, he kind of, like, started talking to me about it and, you know, start watching races here in the United States. And, I mean, it was something, you know, you have that feeling where you say, like, I want to do that there. I wanted to do it there, you know, like. And like I said, even though I have a lot of success in Venezuela, you know, like, it just got that bug in me where, like, I see myself, you know, making it here. And you know, and I start working out to see how I would get my papers and all the stuff. And you know, and yes, my dad was like 120% aboard, you know. Like, that's probably that little extra push, if I needed one. It was about, like, you know, my dad, you know, supporting me about it. And, I mean, he's, you know, he started, you know, since we started talking about if I could move here, you know, he just started telling me that, you know, he admired, you know, Angel Cordero, De La Hussie, all those, you know, big jockeys. And you know, he just, like, gave me the extra that I needed at that point for me to really, like, you know, move forward with the plan.
He's got to be proud of you. I remember talking to you in 2012 back at Saratoga about trying to get your dad here to come enjoy your career. Did that ever happen?
It did happen, yeah. That year, at the end of the year, you know, I get them the visa, you know. And since then, you know, every summer they come here, they stay with me for approximately 6 months every year. And you know, and it's, you know, since then, you know, they've been going back and forth. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I love when I win the races, but, you know, sometimes even my wife get to record the recording how he cheers for me. Like, he just goes to another level when I see that. Like, he brings tears to my eyes. Doesn't matter how many times I get to win and she gets to record my dad, like, and I get to see how excited he gets for any kind of race. That it doesn't matter. It could be a claiming 6,000 or a great one. He cheers all the same way. So he just, you know, awesome.
That's brilliant. Have you ever thought back to your life if you stayed in Venezuela?
Yes, actually, you know, I talked that with my dad. Like, what would it be if I would have stayed there? Like, what would have been my life? You know, I have three beautiful children right now. Like, I mean, I don't know. I would have to say, you know, my life so far has been just perfect. You know, I would have changed it, I would have traded for anything in the world. You know, I have to do it all over again. I'll do it all the same way I just did it and wouldn't change not even a thing.
Yeah. Take us through some of the horses you've ridden, the Flat Out, Moreno, Mohaman. I mean, which ones stand out? I mean, I know you've ridden some really big horses here and won grade ones. Is there one stands out more than the other, or one that kind of got you to the next one?
Well, you know, like every horse, you know, like, you know, give you, you know, you make a space for them in your heart. You know, everyone have a, you know, special part in you and for me in my career. You know, like, I think one of the big ones that really kind of like helped me to get to a next level here in New York was probably Flat Out. You know, like, he gave me a beautiful, nice ride. You know, winning the Cigar Mile was one of those, for me, like, one of those biggest races here in New York. You know, and you know, he has a good place in my heart. You know, and it's always, you know, like, for me, when they ask me about horses, you know, for some reason, Flat Out is one of the first one that come to my mind. You know, Mohaman, you know, finished four and the Kentucky Derby is like my best placing so far in the Derby. So, like, you know, I have that for him too. You know, you know, yeah, I mean, I got this filly, Eclair de Lune, where I won my first grade one in Arlington Park, you know, the Beverly D. So she has a huge place, too, you know, like, just winning my first grade one here in America. And it was for, you know, for the owner of the Arlington Park, you know, which is Mr. Joshua. Yeah, it was just an unbelievable feeling. You know, he was there. You know, he bought that filly just to try to win that race. You know, you couldn't make that up. You know, even if you tried again. But yeah, it's just a lot of good horses. You know, and other horses. You know, they haven't been you know, great estate horses that, you know, like, have a good place in my heart.
For sure, like Lou Bosch and Mr. Buff.
Exactly, Sagina, you know, those are wearing big, you know, grade one, grade two horses, but, you know, they really, you know, like, I enjoy it to be able to ride those kind of horses, too.
Well, one that stands out for me was Amazon Core and the Prioris at Saratoga for Alan Jerkins. I watched it with the Chief, and what was that like for you to provide that kind of moment for a man that was so special to all of us?
You know, it was unbelievable, you know, to be honest. You know, it was a great feeling, but, you know, I think after winning that race, I have a very, you know, I start understanding how important and how well-known and how much people love the Chief. You know, that was 2013. I only probably had in New York maybe a full year riding here. So, you know, I was still, you know, like, learning things and knowing trainers and knowing things around. You know, I didn't know how important he was in the business at that point. I think until that race, you know, when I won that race, I saw how people were cheering and, you know, clapping when he was walking to the winner's circle. You know, I was like in a cloud now. You know, I was just amazed how much people really, really love the Chief. You know, and after that, you know, every time I had to ride for him, you know, I have an extra appreciation, you know, for somebody like him, you know, who's very, you know, he was very strong in our sport.
Yeah, sometimes our game, it transcends the horses and the moments on the racetrack to kind of realize the enormity of relationships and how special people are in your lives, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's one of those moments for sure.
And then take me through winning with Preservationist for Jimmy Jerkins. That had to be special, too. I come back, that was like 7 years later.
Yes. You know, like, I've always been, you know, very, I will say, you know, we'll put it this way, we've been very lucky with Jimmy, you know, but he's been very supporting me, you know, like, he always ride me out through the whole year, you know. We have a good relation, you know, and, you know, having to win with this horse, you know, he has put a lot of work. I know he was always high on that horse. And, you know, even though, you know, he was a horse that, you know, for his 3-4 year old campaign, he was just running in Ecuador, you know, always knew he was very high on him. And, you know, like, just to get to the point where winning a grade one, you know, and grade two with him, you know, he was just an unbelievable for me, just to see the great horseman Jimmy Jerkins is, you know, like, just to get a horse like that until, you know, he keep you know, trying, and he knew what to do exactly just to get to that point. Didn't matter how long it took him, he just to get there, period. You know, it was just an unbelievable process, you know. And like I said, just to be a part, you know, I've been just so blessed just to be a part, you know, with things around us, so many great horsemen and, you know, great people too, you know.
Yeah, for a jockey, it's the loyalty from the trainers that makes such a difference. And you've had the loyalty of Bill Mott and Jimmy Jerkins and horsemen like that. That's got to be a special feeling. Gives you the confidence you need to go out and do your job, I guess.
Yes, you know, it just, you know, like anything. I mean, I guess, you know, I will put it this way. I think every time, you know, I write for those trainers who have that confidence in you, who, like, let you decide. And when you make a mistake, they're fine with it because they know a mistake will happen, you know. You gain 2-3 lengths every time you ride a horse for them, you know, period. You're giving a 2-3 length advantage to those horses because, you know, you train extra because it doesn't matter the outcome. You know, they'll be okay with it, you know, whatever is the mistake. So, you, like, it's that relationship, you know. They let you do your job, and then, you know, of course, you know, you definitely will. You try your best, and like I said, it just works. You know, when they let you do their job like that and they have that confidence in you, you know, you kind of like go to another level of how you ride their horses. You know what I mean? You just like, it gets to an extraordinary level when they let you do the job the way you want it, you know.
That's exactly right. That's Junior Alvarado. Nobody's doing it better than Junior at the moment on the level, on the success for good horsemen on the best circuit. Junior, thanks for your time today, and good luck in the future. We're rooting for you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much again for inviting me, and, you know, I'm here anytime, guys.
Well, fantastic stuff from Junior Alvarado. My thanks to Junior and to Sean Clancy. You can catch In the Room every single Saturday morning here on the show. It's become fast becoming one of the more popular segments that we'll bring you each and every week. And what a just a fantastic person. Forget about being a great jockey, and I do think Junior Alvarado, one of the more underrated jockeys in the sport today, but just a fantastic person as well. And that came through in that conversation with Sean. Coming up next, I'll turn our attention westward to the $100,000 El Camino Real Derby. I'll talk with Owen Hardy. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Experience the thrill of Maryland's finest thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Kick back and catch the live stream from home and visit firstbet.com to make a bet, or stop by one of 8 off-track betting locations throughout the state to watch and wager. Visit MarylandJockeyClub.com for OTB details. Live racing Friday through Sunday with holiday exceptions, and simulcasting racing from around the world every day. Post time, 12:25 p.m.
The championship meet is on at Gulfstream Park. World-class racing Wednesday through Sunday. Thoroughbred stakes action continues with the Grade 2 Phasic Tipton Fountain of Youth and Grade 1 Florida Derby. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. First Bet offers predicted picks, high-definition live stream races, replays, and live betting from the palm of your hand. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Cat Thief digging in at the rail. Worldly Matter with Jared Bailey. Charismatic trained by Lucas on the outside. Now Lucas running 1-2. Charismatic on the outside takes command. On the inside, Cat Thief in the middle of the track. Benavia is flying. Was third. What a dramatic victory as Charismatic and Chris Handley team up to get the roses for Lucas.
That was Dave Johnson with the call of the 1999 Kentucky Derby, and Charismatic getting the victory for Dwayne Lucas, a very special win for them, and it's always special when you win the Kentucky Derby, but Charismatic certainly providing a lot of thrills that afternoon, and he is the only horse, by the way, ever to come through the El Camino Real Derby at Golden Gate and eventually win the Kentucky Derby later that same year. Charismatic was actually beaten in the El Camino that year. He finished second, but of course redeemed himself on the first Saturday in May. And Owen Hardy is hoping for the same from Javonica, although he'll take a win in the El Camino Real later this afternoon, and he'll take a win on the first Saturday in May too. And Owen is with me now here on HRRN. Owen, good morning. Appreciate the time.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How about yourself? Happy El Camino Day.
Thank you very much. I think I was listening to your Charismatic story. I think after the El Camino Real, I might be wrong, but I think Charismatic ran for a tag before he went on to win the Derby.
I think you're right.
At Santa Anita.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Anyway.
Isn't that something?
Isn't it?
Yeah, unbelievable. And Charismatic, I mean, there was a horse that, you know, people didn't really see him coming, right, because of the claiming angle. Was it the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland before he won the Derby?
I believe it was, that was the turnaround with him, was the Lexington, and then he went on to the Derby and the Preakness.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. Let's talk about your run to the Kentucky Derby, at least hopeful run to the Kentucky Derby with Javonica this year. This is a horse that has shown plenty of ability. Tell me more about Javonica.
Yeah, she's a very, very consistent filly. She ran well in her debut. She was fourth, but the jockey wasn't overly hard on her. And then she came back and won very impressively. She was unlucky in Woodbine when I ran her on the synthetic track. She got away from the gate slowly and trailed the field, but made a huge move late in the race. Ran second to a very, very good filly that day. Then I took her to Delmar. She was very unlucky on the turf there. And she got trapped and just couldn't get out until it was too late, but she came flying. And she had a very good race in her last race at Santa Anita. She was a bit of a troubled trip again. She went outside and the winner went inside. There was only inches between them. So she's been very consistent. She's got a very good turn of foot. I think she can lay close or come from off the pace. It all depends on how fast they're going. And I expect her to run another very good race today. I see no reasons why she won't.
Yeah, and I keep talking about Owen, the road to the Kentucky Derby. And as you mentioned, she is a filly taking on the boys in the El Camino. Is that the plan? If she would run well today, would you keep her with the boys and stay on that path?
That would be a long shot. It's just a good race on a surface she's familiar with. It's got a little bit more purse money than the China Doll, which is coming up in another 3 weeks. The spacing was good. I really don't have Derby aspirations with her, you know. Maybe we'll talk about it after the race. I hope we are.
Yeah, she's obviously, as I mentioned, she's special. You went through her resume and you talked about how good she truly is. When did you first know that she could run a little bit?
Oh, as the case with most of these good ones, as soon as they come in and they start working, it shows up immediately. It's not like the light goes on somewhere down the road, three or four races into her career, or you put blinkers on or whatever. The good ones, they show it to you, and that's the way she's been since day one.
Yeah, very, very talented. Javonica taking on the boys in the El Camino Real. Oh, Owen, you've been to the Derby a few times now and still looking for that first win. It is such a hard race to win. I remember we heard from Steve Asmussen in the first hour of the program today, and I remember talking to Steve about that last year, and I asked him the question. I said, Steve, you've won so many big races, more than almost any trainer in the history of the sport, but the Kentucky Derby is one you haven't won yet. Why is it so difficult? And he kind of laughed, and he looked, and he said, it's the Kentucky Derby. And I guess enough said, right?
Yeah, it's just certainly in the last 20 years, it's got a huge field. You know, it used to be like a normal race, 10, 12 horses, but now it's 20-horse field. Post position is very important. That trip around the first turn is where the race is won and lost. So not only have you got to have the best horse, but you got to have the best trip too. And it's hard to combine the both.
You know, I remember the first year you were there. It was 2008 with Colonel John. And the reason I remember that is because I was involved with Bob Feld and the folks at Bongo Racing. We had a horse by the name of Meeting with Destiny that I owned a very, very small piece of. And he ran against Colonel John in the, I believe it was the Santa Anita Derby. And Colonel John thumped him that day, and he thumped everybody. Colonel John was really, really good, wasn't he?
He was an exceptional horse, and that was a key prime example of what I just spoke about. You've got to be lucky. I felt he was, if not the best horse in the race that day, he was certainly the second best, maybe to the winner. And I couldn't see him not hitting the board. But as soon as the gates opened, Mike Smith was on a horse called Diego just inside of me, and he literally took a right-hand turn, and my race was done. Was done two jumps into the race. And, you know, I made a huge move and ran on for fifth, but I had lost all chance then. And that's just racing. That's just luck.
And that we could say that about every race, right, Owen? It's not just the Kentucky Derby. Obviously, with 20 horses, it makes it more difficult to get a clean trip. But how many times do we see a five-horse field and horses get into trouble?
Oh, absolutely. The thing about the Kentucky Derby is there's only one. You only get one chance at it. You don't get to come back in 3 weeks and do it all over again.
Yeah, put this in perspective for me, Owen, because somebody who has actually made it to the Derby on a few occasions, I said this earlier in the program, that it is so difficult just to get a horse to the starting gate for their maiden race, whether it's a special weight, claiming race, it doesn't matter. Just to get a horse to the racetrack and into the starting gate is so difficult. Forget about trying to get to the Kentucky Derby and be one of just 23-year-olds to do it. How difficult can it be just to get a horse to the races?
Sometimes you get lucky, and sometimes you just have horses that are just unlucky horses, and it's one thing after another. You know, maybe not serious injuries, but just little niggling things. You might buck your shins or pop a splint or get a quarter crack, or you can enter a horse and the next thing you know he's got a cough or a fever or both. I mean, it's just a million different things that can go on, and sometimes it happens to your most talented horse and you never really get to see their true ability. But yeah, it could be a nightmare, and other times it could just be straightforward, and a horse comes into you and 6 weeks later he's in the starting gate without a hiccup.
Yeah, it's amazing the way that this game works sometimes. It's unreal. Jovanica going against the boys in the El Camino Real Derby. She will race in the navy blue colors of Godolphin. Owen, what's it like training for Godolphin? How cool is that?
It's probably one of the best jobs on the planet. You know, they're good horses. They're well-broke, well-taken care of. That they pay on time, which is a huge plus in this business, and very, very, very understanding about the ups and downs of the business. They take the good news the bad news just as well as they take the good news. It's a very professional operation from the top down. Jimmy Dell, Dan Pride, Michael Banahan, and all the Johnny Burke and all the people involved. I mean, they're just top class people, and they're just the American people. You know, it's a worldwide operation, but. You know, I've been associated with them for 20 years. I hope I last another 20. But if I was to get fired today, I would certainly wouldn't have a complaint. It's a wonderful operation. I'm just honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was so wonderful to see them. And Jimmy joined me on the show a few weeks ago after they received yet another Eclipse Award for Outstanding Owner. Well-deserved. What a year they had in 2020. And they're off to a very fast start again in 2021.
Yeah, I was just looking on the website maybe yesterday or the day before. They've had 300 runners already this year, globally. That's a staggering amount.
Yeah, incredible. They do it with numbers, they do it with quality, and that's been their thing for a very, very long time. Let's shift gears and talk about another Godolphin runner that you're going to saddle today at Santa Anita. That's in the Grade 2 Santa Monica, and that is Fair Maiden. She is another super, super talented filly.
Yeah, yes, she is. And like you asked about Jovanica, when did I know she had talent? She was maybe the prime example. The very first time I worked her at Arlington Park, I knew she was something special. I don't remember how fast she went, but I remember how she did it. And the fact that she won a grade one at the end of her three-year-old year is no testimony to me. With the amount of ability and talent she displayed, she should have won a group one as a two-year-old. But just an exceptionally talented filly, a little bit quirky, but that's okay. And, you know, I expect her to run a very big race today as well.
What did she show you in that last outing when she won the grade one La Brea?
Well, she just basically justified what I always expected from her. Not only is she talented, but, you know, she's mentally tough when it comes to racing. And you look back over some of her races, she's been in some pretty tight situations. She can take dirt, and she just keeps on going. When you watch her comeback race at Churchill, she's down on the inside taking dirt the whole way. Corey Lannery has to take her back to last at the quarter pole. Then she switches off the fence and circles the field. There was just a very impressive race, and she did. She was unlucky at Keeneland on Breeders' Cup Day. Just got into a jackpot situation. I think she had to be. She was stopped three or four times during the running of the race, and still finished fourth. And then the other day, in the La Brea, it all kind of came together. She was outside, settled nicely off of horses, and when the jockey Ricky Gonzalez called on her, she just exploded.
Well, he's trainer Owen Hardy, and a major reason why those royal blue silks of Godolphin find themselves in the winner's circle so often. Owen, you're a class act. You're always very gracious with your time. Thank you for being with me this morning. All the best with Fair Maiden and Javonica later today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on your show.
All right, Owen Hardy here on HRRN. Like all of our interviews here on the show, that interview provided by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Tell you every week, embrace your passion and wear what you love by visiting EmbraceTheRace.com, the perfect gift for the racing fan on your list. You can find it at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'll get to another break. When I come back, I will open up the phone lines. I'll take your calls. Go ahead and line up now. It's 888-966-4776. 888-966-4776. Let's talk some racing. Let's talk about the stakes races coming up later today. Whatever you want to get into, I'm here for you. Coming up next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the grade three poker and dominating the competition in the grade one Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate to wire winner.
Oscar Performance standing at Millridge.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
From the outside, Dial to Win is there. Second from the inside, Coach Jer's Joy trying to muster another effort with less than an eighth to go. Dial to Win giving this big favorite all she wants. Meanwhile, Lady Traveler is storming home down the center. 16th to go, Zajo calling on all her class, and all her class is enough. She wins by a length and a half.
Zajo overcame a slow start and remained undefeated with a game victory in the Grade 3 Forward Gal last Saturday at Gulfstream Park. That win followed her 7 1/4 length maiden tally, and it makes Zajel your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, already the sire of three black type winners in 2021, including undefeated three-year-old filly Zajel, only Into Mischief has more black type winners this year. Learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Risen Star continues to lead the way by four. King Post has now moved into second as Winning Colors has had it. Grand Time moves alongside and gains into third. The mile and a quarter in 201 and three. Risen Star continues to lead easily by six. King Post remains in second. Brand Time is third on the rail. They pass the eighth pole. Risen Star draws clear to a 10-length lead. King Post second. Brand Time on the rail is third. The winner of the Belmont Stakes, Risen Star.
Yeah, how about that call from Marshall Cassidy, the 1988 Belmont Risen Star getting the victory that afternoon. And today we celebrate Risen Star with the Risen Star Stakes at the Fairgrounds. It's a loaded three-year-old Derby prep race. And if you missed that remembrance of Marshall Cassidy earlier in the program at 9 Eastern, make sure you check out the podcast. John Embriel, fantastic. Larry Colmus, fantastic in remembering Marshall Cassidy and sharing some of their stories and fondest memories of Marshall, who passed away last Sunday. I mentioned the phone lines are open, 888-966-4776. Let's welcome in Ronnie in Louisville. Ronnie, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. There's only one gift that I would be pleased with on Valentine's Day since I'm a race fanatic. That would
go
be two to win on all the entries in the future pool. It would cost someone $48, and I know I would get a gift come the first Saturday in May. That might be way more than $48.
Well, you just might. Yeah, play the field. Why not? I think that would be the one. You'd have to play all the individual interest, right? And
that's
hope
right.
for a long shot. Leave the field out of it because the field's always the favorite. And hope for the best.
That's right.
Do you ever play
buy my own candy or my own flowers or whatever. But I kind of think it's sitting up for a long shot this year, but I'm just guessing like most race fans.
Yeah, you know, great point. Not a lot, not many horses that jump off the page right now and say, yes, I'm the horse to beat on the first Saturday in May. Ronnie, do you ever play the Kentucky Derby like that where you put $2 on every horse in the race?
No, I try to select as a handicapper individual choices, but as you said, I don't fool with the field because, you know, you're looking at, I don't know, $6 or $8 return at best.
Yep, yep.
But I'll end up playing in every one of the future pools, and the first thing I know, I've played probably $80 or $90 come Derby Day. And I've hit on a few, but I still lose, you know, they don't get a $2 return to pay that kind of money. But I enjoy it, trying to handicap them this early out and trying to come up with a winner.
Yeah,
but I will say this, the horses on the East Coast, they're at a great disadvantage, and here's the reason. This severe weather we're having, postponing, you know, a lot of the major prep races. And you take the races in Florida and California, I think they're at a great advantage because they normally don't have to go with racing conditions being terrible. They continue to train.
It's always a risk when you're going through Aqueduct. And you know, nowadays, even Oaklawn, right, having to postpone the Southwest Stakes by a week. And that doesn't sound like much, Ronnie, but it is. When you have a plan mapped out for your horse and a schedule mapped out to get to the Kentucky Derby, 1 week, I guess if it's going to happen, let it happen early in the season like this as opposed to for the final prep race.
I would agree. And then as I heard Steve Asmussen on your show, I think the weather conditions are terrible at the fairgrounds today for the Risen Star. But
yeah. Yeah, chance of rain at fairgrounds later today, too.
Yeah. And I like to see horses race on, you know, a dry surface. It's just, to me, it's more of a true indicator. And, of course, I know we're not in control of the weather. If we were, we would have it snowing in August to cool off.
Well, Ronnie, listen, appreciate the phone call, and thanks for listening to the program, my friend. Thank you.
Enjoy it very much, Mike.
All right. Good luck. Ronnie in Louisville, the phone line continues to be open now, 888-966-4776. The number you get in if you want to talk about that Derby picture, if you want to talk about – how about that? Ronnie brings up an interesting point of playing the future wagers, right? Now, a lot of people might not agree with that, but yeah, you can have a little fun. Throw $2 on every horse in the main body of the field, And then you got to hope for a long shot. There's 24 horses in the body of the field, cost you $48. You got to hope for, 25-1 shot to make a couple bucks. But at this point in the year, maybe you get a good value on somebody who's completely under the radar, turns out to be a monster by the time you get to Louisville 77 days from today. 888-966-4776, the number of the call. Let me hear from you, HRN Nation, if you want to have a little fun like Ronnie did, talking about your what you want for Valentine's Day. You know, that's our poll question today on our Twitter feed. And on Facebook, what is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? And I came up with three choices plus an other category, so you could have some flexibility to let me know. Mark Cassie, who will be 60 tomorrow on Valentine's Day, said that for him it's a cheesecake. He usually gets a cheesecake on his birthday that his wife Tina will make for him. But Tina's the one who gets really shafted on this whole thing because she would love to get a, and I'm sure Mark takes very good care of her on Valentine's Day, but it's Mark's birthday, so it's a special day for him. So her Valentine's Day kind of gets overshadowed just a little bit with him being a Valentine's baby. But so you can choose from flowers, chocolates, dinner, either in or out, and another category. And so far, well, it looks like it's going to be a runaway win for dinner at 56%. I kind of thought chocolates would put up a little bigger fight there for the Valentine's Day gift. Let me hear from the ladies in HRN Nation, because I know my wife, if I don't bring home chocolate-covered strawberries tomorrow, if she doesn't have chocolate-covered strawberries in the refrigerator, I'm in big trouble. So let me hear from the ladies. What is it that you want to make sure that you're getting on Valentine's Day? 888-966-4776. That's 888-966-4776. HRRN, the number to call and be part of the show. I told you about the big prep races. We've been talking about those throughout the morning. Are you buying or selling Senor Buscador in today's Risen Star? You heard from his trainer earlier in the program, Todd Fincher. And I look, he's two for two. Both wins at Remington in Oklahoma, a lesser circuit than he's running on today at the fairgrounds, presumably easier competition, but he's done it the right way. He broke his maiden by 2.5 lengths, ran away with the springboard mile by 5.75 lengths, and I talked about the late pace numbers that are featured in the Brisnet Pass performances. He ran a 105 late pace number, which is sensational in winning that springboard mile. He can motor home. And he's undefeated, two for two. He's by Mineshaft. Why not? Why not? Are you buying or selling a horse like Senor Buscador? If you're betting the futures right now, the Derby futures, are you going to be taking a flyer on a horse like Senor Buscador? Not necessarily him, but a horse that is promising but hasn't really proven that they belong on the big stage yet. Let me know your thoughts. 888-966-4776. 888-966-HRRN. This segment, HRN Nation, all about you. If you want to call in and just tell me where you're listening, how you're listening, what you think of the new three-hour format here on the show, what you think of some of the new segments, I'm open to that too. Let it fly. 888-966-4776, the number of the call. You have about 6 minutes left in this segment with the phone lines being open. But this is a segment I'm going to do each and every week for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network and on the Equine Forum. So you'll be able to chime in and let me know your thoughts. Javonica, you just heard from Owen Hardy in the previous segment. Is she good enough to beat the boys in the El Camino Real? And you heard me keep bringing up the fact that he was on the Derby trail, and I guess he is with having a filly running against the boys. She's 5-2. It's not like she's 50-1. She's 5-2 in that race today. Second choice on the morning line behind Rombauer. And remember, Rombauer was supposed to run Was it 2 weeks ago at Santa Anita? And Mike McCarthy was on this program. And he mentioned that the owner called him the night before the race and said, no, I don't want to run at Santa Anita. I prefer to go to Golden Gate and run in the El Camino Real on the synthetic. You could tell Mike McCarthy was not thrilled with that decision. He felt like Rombauer was sitting on go a couple of weeks ago. And he felt like that racetrack, that surface that day, was perfect for him. It had a little bit of moisture in it from all the rain that they were getting in Southern California. And you could just tell Mike was not thrilled with having to make this decision, but sometimes you just have to do what the owner says. We'll see if it pays off for Rombauer and if that's the right call. He's the 8-5 morning line favorite in the El Camino Real Derby. And you heard me mention early, the only horse ever to come out of that race and win the Kentucky Derby was Charismatic for Dwayne Lucas, who was beaten in the El Camino Real Derby that year. He was second. How about the Risen Star Stakes? Let's take a look at some of the history there. You've had two horses who have run in the Risen Star and gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. Both of those horses were beaten in the Risen Star. So maybe if you're looking for the Derby winner, if you're playing the futures, you get some value on the Derby winner with a horse that gets beat in the Risen Star today. War Emblem in 2002 was sixth in the Risen Star. And Country House, the controversial Derby winner for Bill Mott after that long inquiry in 2019, he was second in the Risen Star. Interesting. So both prep races today have produced limited Kentucky Derby winners, but the horses that have gone on to win the Kentucky Derby from the El Camino Real and the Risen Star did not win those respective races. Think about that. Yeah, pretty interesting. 3 minutes left, HRN Nation. 888-966-4776, the number to call if you want to weigh in on any of these things. The phone, I'm going to keep them open right up until 10:53 Eastern time. So you've got 3 minutes. Squeeze in one more quick call and talk some racing. You know, I've had people tell me in the past that it'd be great to have an opportunity to call in and talk about some of the topics that we discuss here on the Equine Forum on Saturday morning. So here you go. Here is your opportunity. First hour of the show, I talked with Jillian Tulloch, the racing secretary at Laurel. We talked about their outstanding program today that features six stakes races. You heard from Mark Cassie talking about his runners coming up later today in three stakes races at the fairgrounds. And Todd Fincher, as I mentioned a short time ago, talking about Senor Buscador. And Owen Hardy talking about Fair Maiden today at Santa Anita and Jovanica in the El Camino Real Derby. So if any of those things strike your fancy, you want to talk about those, whatever it is in the world of thoroughbred racing, this is your segment, 888-966-4776. In the meantime, don't forget that you can check out the podcast of our Weekend Stakes Preview Show presented by Naira Betts. As a matter of fact, the podcast of all of our talk shows are on our website. But the Weekend Stakes Preview Show with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman is posted right now. They walk through all of the stakes races coming up this weekend, not just the Risen Star and the El Camino Real, and they share their thoughts, their analysis, and their selections. It's the Weekend Stakes Preview every Friday at 6 o'clock Eastern presented by Naira Betts, and you can head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast at your leisure, but a great way to get ready for all the big races coming up later today. All right, well, I guess you're not in a talkative mood, HRN Nation. We'll do it again next week. I'll open the phone lines at 10:40. Well, we do have time. One more quick call. I have to get to this break, but Joe is on the line. Joe, good morning.
Morning. We're having our horse racing fantasy draft today, and it's my favorite time of the year. And I was wondering, I got two questions for you, actually. Who would your first overall pick be if you get the first pick? And then whatever happened to get her number? Is that horse still working out, have you heard?
That's a great question. I'll look that one up for you as we're talking here. But I think you have to go with the central quality, right? And I know he's going
to
be
a... That seems to be the case, yeah. But yeah, I was really impressed with Caddy, I guess, a couple weeks ago, but Caddy Hill River, but... Yeah, I like his central quality. That's hard to beat.
He's going in the right direction. There's no doubt about it. He's going in the right direction, too. Get her number did indeed work out earlier this week, February 9th at San Luis Rey, four furlongs, 49-4. So Get her number is still, still in training. Yep, and 2 for 3 lifetime.
Good to know.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks for the information. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, good luck, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for taking the time.
All right,
one final break. I'll come back and wrap up the show. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include greatest stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
2-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caraconti, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, you can now watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Make plans to join us online for a big 3-day weekend, as we'll have special President's Day racing this Monday. On Saturday, top fillies and mares will go 7 furlongs in the Grade 2 Santa Monica. On Sunday, 3-year-old fillies will go 6 furlongs on turf in the Grade 3 Sweet Life. And on Monday, we'll honor the dam of 1989 Horse of the Year, Sunday Silence, with the $75,000 wishing well at 6.5 furlongs on turf. Looking ahead to one of the biggest days of the year, Saturday, March 6th, we'll have 5 stakes, including the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap and the Grade 2 San Felipe, one of America's most important Derby preps. With first post time at 12:30, join us early all weekend at 11:20 a.m. as track announcer Frank Miramonte and Tom Quigley handicap each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, remember, the February 13th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet is one that you're absolutely not going to want to miss. Features include Head in the Game, jockey Kendrick Carmouche, who rises to the top in New York. He was our very first guest with Sean Clancy on In the Room a few weeks ago. You can check out the podcast. Kendrick, one of the nicest, classiest guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. That was a fantastic interview, and I'm sure it's a fantastic story in the Blood Horse. Market Watch 2020 Purse Review, North American Stakes Review, and a look at the top 100 trainers. A legacy denied. Racism ended a once inclusive tradition in racing. And Byron King's, his Derby Dozen, a closer look at the top 3-year-olds currently on the road to the Kentucky Derby. All of that in the February 13th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. You can download a copy of the issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe at bloodhorse.com/subscribe. Well, it's been a very, very busy show. Covered an awful lot of ground, as I told you we would. Kicked it off with that interview with Steve Asmussen from yesterday's race day program. He took a look at all of his top horses coming up later today. Julian Tulloch, the racing secretary from Laurel, was with me at 8:35. John Embriel and Larry Colmus both join me at 9 o'clock to take a look at Marshall Cassidy and remember him and his legacy. Mark Cassie was here. Todd Fincher was here. And Owen Hardy was here talking about their contenders in the races later today. Junior Alvarado took time to sit down with Sean Clancy in our In the Room segment. All of that part of a very busy show. If you missed it, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. You can do that at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Poll question results. What is your favorite gift to receive on Valentine's Day? Yeah, dinner. 56% of you saying, I'll take a dinner. Why not? For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Pena. Happy retirement, Marquise Pouncey. Go Steelers.